Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill. It's her, Wendy. You already heard from the drummer.
And that's all you'll hear from him all
right,
day.
Right. How was your weekend? Was this a nice weekend for you?
It was just, yes, it was hot. It was. This
sure.
is going to sound so unbelievably terrible.
But?
Sometimes it's too hot to go to the beach. Sometimes it's too hot to go to the pool.
Too hot to go to the beach.
It is so hot.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's best to sit in the air conditioning and go through all your closet materials and get maybe 6 or 7 bags ready for Goodwill.
Yeah, that's productive.
You're supposed
good
to
you.
Do that in a winter, you know, when it's cold outside, you don't want to go outside. But I'm telling you, it was, and all the people who marched in the Pride Parade, kudos
yeah.
to them.
Yep.
I saw a lot of the Facebook Live posts that everybody here at WGN Radio and WGN TV put together.
I'm glad the weather was nice for it. You know, they had been saying all week they were expecting intermittent showers throughout the day, and that never really happened. It was
although it might have felt better.
Yeah, probably would have. Yeah, that's very true.
Did you have a lovely weekend?
I did. I spent most of the weekend consoling one of my daughters over the loss of Andrew Shaw from the Blackhawks. She's not taking that news well, and neither am I.
You know, I had to break the news to Dylan, my son, who has the Shaw jersey,
yeah.
sweater, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I have kept my streak about breaking, you know, the what did I call myself? I can't even remember where I told bad news. I had to tell Jimmy Mack that the museum, the Lucas Museum,
right.
wasn't coming here.
I had to tell Corey Feldman that Tom Snyder had died.
Mm-hmm. And then I had to tell Dilly Mack that Andrew Shaw is no more.
No more Andrew Shaw. In terms of being a Blackhawk, he'll play for the Montreal Canadiens, but that doesn't help us. We want him
dead
here
to
on
me.
We want him here on the Blackhawks, where he just was as gritty a player as I've ever seen. I love that about him. I love the fact that he would take on guys way, way, way bigger and stronger and just didn't seem to realize that he was the smaller of the two.
I agree with you, and I thought for sure when Bickle and Teravainen went that
yeah.
that was to try and keep Shaw, and he wanted $4.5 million. And they,
so do I, by the way.
Well, see, so you're they're going to trade you.
I would love to have
NPR.
$4.5 million. No, I'm not quiet enough for NPR. You have to be very quiet.
Keep it down.
To be very quiet over there.
It would be really fun to talk like this the whole day.
Right.
Charlie Wojciechowski should work there.
Yeah, he's got a good NPR sounding voice.
We're calling a golf game. Do you call a golf game? I love Charlie Wojciechowski, but he's very soft-spoken like
the
this.
The three broadcasting jobs where you are almost required to whisper are calling golf, bowling, and NPR. If you're a good whisperer and have a fairly decent control over what's going on in the world, you got a job at one of those places.
But yes,
Andrew Shaw be missed.
But you want $4.5 million. I would just take $1 million.
That'd be all right,
I'm not
too.
Greedy.
That'd be all right.
But they were prepared to give him some million, just
yeah.
not $4.5 million. And he chose, right? Wasn't he a free agent?
Well, it gets tricky. You know, because of the way the salary cap is structured, and I'm trying to remember, I know it went up a little bit from last year, but they didn't know how much it would go up. So they were trying to budget exactly what they could spend. So it's officially a trade. They got a couple of future draft choices for Andrew Shaw, so you don't know how that'll pan out because, you know, they're just young kids and they haven't played in the NHL yet. But
wasn't he given a bit of a choice? Like, we can give you this. What do you think?
Oh yeah, they had been negotiating with him, but it became obvious that they weren't going to be able to come close to the money that he was looking for. Because they're still trying to sign Ladd as well.
Yeah.
That one's still kind of floating out
there. I
thought
he was going to go to make room.
That may still happen. I'd hate to lose him, too. But that could still happen.
Brandon Saad, he left us, you know. I mean, that's what happens. And I feel so sad. It was like after the White Sox won the World Series and then everybody split up. That
yeah,
whole dream
team.
They
start drifting away.
And it's heartbreaking because it's like it's working.
I know. It
together.
I know. It'll be tough to replace him. I mean, he played with so much enthusiasm, and I really think he was such a spark plug, even when he wasn't. I mean, he did what you want a hockey player to do. He made all the right blocks. He made goals. He did all that. But I really think when you're a player and you've got a guy like that skating around you on your team, it makes you play better, you know?
Absolutely. It gives you the spark you need.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you're so funny, you make me try and be more funny. But really, you surround yourself with great people,
yeah.
you get better.
Yeah. So we will miss you very, very much.
I tweeted at him.
Did you tweet? Yeah.
He put a little statement saying, you know, thanks to all the fans, thanks to the Blackhawks, thanks to the people behind the scenes at the Blackhawks who took such great care of me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we are just so going to miss you. Best of luck. And you were so much fun on the ice.
Remind me, because I think he was there for all three of the championships. I know two for sure, but was he there for the first one as well? He must have been, right?
I don't think so.
Was he not there for the first one?
I'm not 100% positive. Kevin's checking on that.
All right.
Again, I would like to pitch this to the Blackhawks store because I think it's a great idea and they still will make money.
Yeah.
The sweaters are so expensive that all I'm going to say is I bought a plain one because my son Michael wanted Stan Mikita. He wanted 21.
Yeah.
Special order. It wasn't extra. You just bought a plain jersey. You send it out. They send it out.
Uh-huh.
They put the number. And do you want C? And I said, well, yeah, he was a captain.
Put the C on there.
And then you it arrives and you go pick it up at the Blackhawks store. So why can't they, for even half price, change the number for you?
Like a buyback service almost.
Yeah.
Where depending on if one of your players gets traded or whatever, you have the option to go and get a different player put on the jersey, right?
I just think
I like
it's a,
that.
It's
I think that's very smart.
And they still will get money.
Yeah.
And you know, because Dylan's like, I can't wear Schauser anymore.
Oh,
I said,
no,
yes, you can.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, I want to get Panarin. I said, okay, well, good. Go save your money and get Panarin. And then Jim says, you got to get Hjalmarsson because you get your money's worth. Or do they charge more per letter?
That's tough. There's a lot of letters in that one. Van Riemsdyk also.
True.
I would just hate to see a kid whose jersey is a regular Blackhawks jersey, but he's got like his own homemade panel with a name and a number kind of just masking taped onto the back. That would make me sad.
What would make me sadder is to see an Urlacher.
Yeah, that would be sad too.
On the Hawks
that would
jersey.
Be sad. That would be weird.
Andrew Shaw, only two cups.
So he was not with them the first time. That's interesting. In my head, he was there for all three, but I guess he was only there for two. But an integral part of both those teams.
Absolutely.
He really was.
We will miss you.
So much. All right, a break and then more show. You want to jump in? You can. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Remember a little over a week ago, we were talking about, you had just returned from Disney World, and we were talking about various rides at amusement parks. Like your stranger rides, and then I would describe the ride to you, and then you would get dizzy thinking about it.
I'd get the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, you would get the heebie-jeebies. Did you see the slide that they opened up over the weekend in Los Angeles?
Yes.
That's at the top of one of the biggest skyscrapers in the country. So what you do is you get in on the slide, and it's completely glass. It's all encased in glass. You slide down just a story.
Well, you
just
do.
One story. I don't know that I could.
You can see straight down to the ground.
Right. Right.
I mean, why? Why? And you don't go down to the ground. You only go down, what, like two levels or something?
I think it's just a level. I think you only go one level.
Is that when the elevator's crowded? What, I mean, why?
No, it's just to say you've done it. It's just, you know, it goes from their observation deck down to a slightly lower observation deck. When I first heard about this, I thought to myself, it'd be really cool if they could do like a winding slide that went all the way down the building, but that would be too much. Even one floor seems like a lot. There's video of this of people going on it and just screaming like crazy.
This reminds me of a video, and I'm sure you've seen it because you like to laugh at other people's misfortune.
Yes, I do.
It's somewhere in Asia. It might be Japan. It might be China.
Is
I'm
it
not,
the bridge?
Yes.
I know
it's
that
a
bridge.
Glass bridge.
Yeah.
And there are people that will not walk across it, but they're with someone who is walking across it.
Right.
So people are dragging them. They dragged a dog that was freaking out. Oh my God.
Well, it's weird because it's obviously both the slide and the bridge are playing a mind game. You know that it's safe.
You do?
You kind of know that it's safe. But you can. You can see all the way down to the bottom. And in this one, it's over 1,000 feet, I think. Beware this new Los Angeles attraction if you're afraid of heights. The Sky Slide, a glass slide fixed along the tallest building west of the Mississippi River, is open for business as of Saturday. Thrill seekers can pay $25 to slide down a 45-foot bulletproof glass.
Thank God. It's in L.A. You got to have bulletproof.
I guess so. I don't know why it's bulletproof, but it is. Now, it says here it's $25, but in one of the other things that I read, just to go up to the observation deck is like $18 or $19, and then it's like $6 or $7 to go down the slide. So that's a little misleading. The strength of the glass is enough to withstand hurricane winds and an earthquake.
And I heard a reporter say two beluga whales.
And two beluga whales.
I heard him say that. If you hung two beluga whales, and why would you?
I guess.
It would not. He goes, I've been told. So that doesn't
all right.
make me feel good.
It's just conjecture. The slide is part of the OUE Skyspace LA. It's a rooftop observatory that gives visitors 360 views of the city.
360 degrees?
It should be degrees. It just has 360 views of the city, but I'm pretty sure it's degrees.
That would be pretty cool to go up there and look, but I would not go down the slide.
I can't figure out if I'd be brave enough to. I would almost have to make a judgment call when I was up there.
You'd do it. I know you, Bill. You'd do it.
I want to say yes, but when I see the video, it's that first turn. I mean, you kind of hit up against the side mm-hmm. wall a little bit, but you know it's, I mean, it's not a. Without the sidewall, no. If it's just a slide, no. There was another part I wanted to tell you. As someone who just moved out to Los Angeles, this is the writer saying, you won't see me going down it anytime soon, and I love slides. I love slides too, but not at the top of a skyscraper, the tallest building west of the Mississippi. That's big.
Can I tell you, if I'm going to the observatory, like in the Hancock Building or whatever it's called now?
Willis Tower.
I'm not calling it that. Or the Sears Tower.
Sears Tower is the one that's called Willis Tower. Oh, just okay. Messing with you. All tall buildings are now called the Willis Tower.
If I'm going to the observation deck, I'm probably dressed kind of nicely because I'm probably on vacation.
Sure.
So why in the world would I want to go down a slide?
I don't know. You know what they do show is, and I forgot about this, everybody's on a mat.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Remember when it was very popular to have it? I guess maybe they still do it at county
they
fairs
do.
Or carnivals. It's that three humped slide,
yes.
And you go down on a mat.
On a burlap bag is what they use now.
Yeah. And I guess that's for traction, right? You go faster if
for
you're on
less
that.
Traction.
Oh, is
I mean,
it less?
To make it slide, because otherwise if you're wearing shorts and you're sweaty,
you'll bounce.
You'll just stick and bounce down like Homer Simpson. Somebody has texted, look up the story of that glass bridge in China and see people hitting it with sledgehammers to prove how safe it is.
Oh, that's fun. Oh, let's do that.
I like my glass for looking out. That's it.
Well, remember when the observatory at the Hancock, the glass cracked? Like people were on it and you saw the glass crack and nothing happened.
Yeah,
it didn't break or anything.
Yeah.
And people from the tower go, well, you're going to get that. It's settling. No, it's unsettling.
It is unsettling.
All right, we need to take a quick break and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks very much. I don't know much about the world of golf. Do you? Do you know anything about golf?
I know you're trying to get the ball in the hole. You're
supposed to get the ball in the hole.
Various clubs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A big, thick, big one is that a driver? Or is that the putter? I don't even know.
That's the one you want to putt with, Wendy. The big wooden one.
Yeah.
Bring that one out on the green.
Looks like a club foot.
Yeah.
That's
you want to putt with that one.
Only use that when you're close to the hole. I know that. Don't.
Why don't they give that at miniature golf places then? Because all you're doing is putting.
I guess so. All right. So from the world of golf.
By my answers, can you tell I know nothing about golf?
You know less about golf than I do. I didn't think that was possible.
Actually, Wendy, by our answers, we can tell you know nothing about golf.
All right. Does this name mean anything to you from the world of golf? Bubba Watson.
Oh,
you've heard of that guy, Bubba Watson.
Sure.
Did you see him on 60 Minutes yesterday?
No.
All right. Because I don't really follow golf, I didn't understand this. I knew that people talked about how much they don't like him. And I don't follow golf enough to understand why. He seems to be really good at it. So in my head, I'm like, well, that's why people don't like him. He, like Andrew Shaw that we were talking about earlier, is a fierce competitor who, if you're another golfer, you go, I don't like that guy because he's always out there winning. That's why I don't like Bubba Watson. That's what I thought, but I was wrong. They did an interview with him and his caddy and other players and everybody around him. And it turns out he's got this thing where he's afraid of, and I quote, everything. He was on 60 Minutes yesterday talking to him about this because they always talk about how aloof he is when people come up to him and they'll want an autograph or, when you golf and they've got what they call the gallery, there's all these people kind of floating around. So people will, from time to time, say, oh, good shot or good luck with this or something like that.
And it freaks him out.
He won't even make eye contact. He just stares straight ahead. His caddy told a story yesterday about this kid who came up to him. There was nobody else around, and this kid comes up with an autograph book and a pen, and he goes, "Mr. Watson, I'm a huge fan. Is there any way I could just get you?" And he just kept walking, like he wouldn't even. So his caddy said he saw that early on in their relationship. So he goes, "When I saw this, I said to myself, this guy's a jerk. What am I want to be a caddy for this guy? I don't think so." He goes, "But now the more I get to know him and understand him."
It's a neuroses.
It's exactly what it is.
Poor guy.
Yeah. It made me really like him a lot. I had no idea all this was going on. All I knew that in golf world, people didn't take kindly to this guy, and I never knew why until yesterday.
That's like Monk. Remember the show with Tony Shalhoub?
It's kind of like Monk, yeah.
I feel bad for that poor little kid who wanted the autograph, but I mean, it's like he couldn't control it. He has just this fear of everything.
Well, they
germs.
Asked him, they said, list the things that you're afraid of, and then he just starts running through it. He goes, "I'm afraid of heights, I'm afraid of open spaces, I'm afraid of people." It's all these things. So they said, toward the end of the piece, they said, "What is your goal, Bubba Watson? What do you want to be?" And you would think a guy like that would go, "Oh, to be a better golfer, you know, whatever his problems are on the course to get the." But he goes, "I just want to be a better person, you know." And then you're like, "Oh boy, is this guy misunderstood?" Because everybody doesn't like him because they think he's just cold and he doesn't want to deal with anybody. But it's not that at all. He's afraid of everybody.
And he can't control it. It's an irrational fear. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's a mental disorder issue.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
He says he's trying to get better. He's doing everything to get better. But then you think, isn't that an interesting line of work? Because you're going to be around. I mean,
yeah,
I guess
it's golf.
Say that
you're not
about
a team player.
Yeah, that's true.
You're more on your own.
Yeah, I imagine. But they were talking about how he's, and they didn't, this is my terminology, not theirs. He's like hyper-focused on things. Like his caddy says, he'll pull out little details of things that you go, boy, his back was turned to this, but he saw this going on. He's so hyper-focused on everything. I don't know how that would play into a game where you have to focus. The whole game is focus. So how, I
well,
don't know
he
how
is
he's
focusing. He's just
hyper-focused, right?
Which I'm surprised he's so good because that kind of messes up your thought. Like,
yeah,
you do have to focus, but at some point, don't. I mean, I should ask Steve. He plays more golf than we do. You focus on what you want to do, but then don't you have to let go at some point,
right,
or you're just going to mess yourself up?
Right, right. Well, they were explaining, and I don't know how common this is, but my guess is it's very uncommon. They asked him about golf lessons, and he's never had a golf lesson, never once in his life. And that's really rare for somebody to make, not just make the pros, but be as good as he is without ever having a golf lesson. So then they showed the golf club that he learned to golf at, and it's not like a country club. It's not like a real rich. It's like, it's not run down, but it's a lower tier golf place. And he said, this is where I learned to do it. And I guess he's really good at hooking and slicing and stuff like that. He's amazing at that. So he said, I had to, because there's so many trees here blocking the way. I had to learn to get around them and stuff. So it was fascinating to see the way his mind worked, especially knowing, and he knows it. He talked about it. He goes, I know I've got a terrible reputation and people are not fans. They just out and out don't like me. Like, he's so aware of that. But that's secondary to him.
Wow, this should have come out sooner. And
don't you think?
Although I give him so much credit for going on 60 Minutes and talking about this, because everybody has something going on.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like to admit anything.
Well, that was like one of the biggest takeaways for me. First of all, I never enjoyed anyone named Bubba so much in my whole life. I hope that doesn't sound awful. But usually we get this in our head is what's a guy like Bubba like? You know, it's
like
country bumpkin types.
Yeah.
I know in the South it's very common to just refer to a guy as Bubba. That just goes on all
day,
every day.
Is that their dude?
I think it is. It is. But like the fact that he was addressing it and he was aware of it, and it did, like he said, he goes, I know what kind of a reputation I have, and you know, he wants to fix that, but it's so much deeper seated than him just being rude to people. He wasn't being rude to people. He's afraid of people.
He said, now you mentioned, I just found some more things. He was scared of heights, like you said, scared of buildings falling on me.
Right.
Scared of the dark, scared of crowds. Those are my biggest issues. And then he said that he's upset by the uproar of butterflies in the adjoining meadows. All right, you don't really hear butterflies too much.
No, but he does.
I know.
The interviewer,
super hearing or something?
the interviewer asked him because they, during the taping, he heard something way, way off in the distance, like somebody dropped something. And he puts his hands up. And he's like, I got to wait. And the interviewer had no idea what he was talking about, but something was dropped way, way, way far away. But it got to him. He heard it. It disturbed him.
You know, it's weird. I'm a casual golf fan. I like to watch the majors and everything. And
yeah.
I've seen him interviewed after tournaments.
Yeah.
The green jacket, you know, and I've seen him. Wasn't he on the Tonight Show after he won?
He was, Letterman.
And I wasn't aware of any of that.
I think it's just coming to light now. And I don't know why. I don't know why all of a sudden he or somebody on his team decided we should put this out there so people know. He's not purposely being a jerk to everybody. He's afraid of everybody, and that buildings will fall on him.
Listen to this, though, too, guys. Bubba notices everything. Like the one guy among 3,000 spectators that's wearing a red shirt, a blue cap, who's got a phone underneath a thing. Mm-hmm. And he'll focus on that then.
But that's what I mean is, how could you be that effective at golf where you so need to focus on the aspects of the game that there's no room to focus on stuff like that.
Right.
But he is.
I thought you meant focusing on golf things, like what I have to do, but he's distracted by everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know how your mind could allow you to be that good if little things like that are also playing in your head while you're golfing. I can't figure out how he can be that great at what he does.
He's had to overcome a lot of obstacles,
yeah.
And I'm curious if he's getting... You know, if he's seeing a therapist about this now, or was he? Or...
They didn't really delve into that, but I was wondering the same thing.
Because that's, in a lot of people, what he has could be very debilitating.
Yeah.
He seems to be flying, soaring with the Eagles on this,
yeah.
Thank God.
It was a great piece. It was really fun to watch.
Watch that.
All right, we need to take a quick break and then a lot more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
That would be a good little family trip.
To go to Springfield?
My mom took me when I was younger, although the kids go in with their school now.
Mm-hmm. That's a field trip.
Yeah. They do Washington, D.C. You can do, but that's something I want to, one of these summers, do a road trip to Washington, D.C. with the kids, because they're getting older now. They're not going to appreciate it.
Do they want to go to Washington, D.C.?
No, but I think it's a rite of passage. I think they do. I mean, isn't that someplace you... Did your parents ever take you there?
No, I went as an adult. It was always voted down whenever my mom or dad would suggest it. And I understand the significance of seeing Washington, D.C., but as a kid, when you're given, you know, the various choices.
I guess.
And Washington always came in kind of dead last in our voting.
I have to admit, when we did go to Washington, D.C., it was my mom, my brother, sister, and I. And... they were doing some tour of something, and my brother's like, I'm just going to stay back in the pool.
Yeah.
And I said, well, if he gets to stay back in the pool,
right.
I'm staying back in
right.
the pool. And I think my mom did let us miss something one day, but it's kind of stupid to do that.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. When I was in grade school, the class that graduated in front of us, and you're the same year as me, that was the class of 76. So those kids in our grade school, the eighth graders, got to go to Washington, D.C.
Oh, from junior high. We didn't graduate from high school in 76.
No,
scared me. Am I older?
From grade school. And then I think we, the next year, they went to Washington, D.C., and then I think we went to the Little Red Schoolhouse, which was not as cool as Washington, D.C.
In junior high? I think we went there in like third grade.
Yeah, that's a trip. I remember us all thinking... This would have been so much better 6 years ago because, I mean, we were 13. It's like, yeah, we've seen Little House on the Prairie. We get it, how it works. All the kids are in one class. Okay, what else do you have for us? And there wasn't a whole lot more beyond that.
What about Graw Mill?
Yeah, we went there 1 year.
Trailside Museum?
I don't think we did that one.
I loved that.
What is that one?
That is somewhere in the Hinsdale area. Someone will know, 312-981-7200. And all I remember is you got to pet animals, and all I wanted was a cat when I got home.
Where is that one?
I think it's in, like I said, the Hinsdale Willow Springs
And it's
area.
Called Graw Mill?
I don't know. Trailside Museum.
Growy Mill?
Graw Mill.
You did this one?
Yeah, Growy Mill. I never went, but...
I'm talking about Trailside Museum. Graw Mill just had a mill.
Yeah.
And then a gift shop.
Well, that's fun, I guess.
There's also the sex field trip, right? There was at the Crown
Robert
Center.
Robert Crown.
Yeah.
What's that one?
Oh, you should have gone. You weren't that far away in Oak Lawn. It's the Robert Crown Health Center, and you would go learn about the birds and the bees and babies.
I know we didn't do that one. That would have been
a
drugs.
Good one. They have a drug program there now, too.
Just
it's
not
awesome.
Rock and roll. They have sex and drugs, but no rock and roll. That would have been a perfect hat trick if they had put them all in one building.
I'm sorry. The Trailside Museum is in River Forest on Thatcher.
Oh. But that was one of the better ones?
It's a museum of natural history in River Forest. They have a lot of pets there and nesting sites for birds. It's a beautiful place. I do remember going there. But the Little Red Schoolhouse.
That was a must. You always did that one. We did the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum one time.
We didn't. Where was that?
And the Wax Museum. They were right next to each other in Old Town. Not right next to each other. There was some space in between. But they were both in Old Town. They're both gone now.
Oh.
The Wax Museum was fun. And then Ripley's. And then the most fun we had was, because of that part of Old Town had a lot of adult bookstores, our bus was parked right by one of the adult bookstores. And then every time a guy would come out of the bookstore, we would all applaud and cheer for them. And they didn't know what to make of that. They're like, uh-oh, what happens next?
That would be weird to see.
Some kids would take pictures, you know, because it was a field trip and they had their cameras. So and, you know, the guy's just trying to shield his eyes.
Oh, is that funny?
Come on.
All right. Well, the Robert Crown Center, Incredible Machine Body Anatomy, that's one of their programs. Puberty Education for Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Puberty Education for Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Life Begins.
That's true.
That's the big one.
Right.
Like,
right.
That's what boys and girls figure out. A baby comes from where?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ew.
So would they take you guys there instead of teaching you this? Or
well,
along
yeah,
with?
Well, yeah, because they have the experts. So you'd have, like, the health, you know, class. Usually in gym class for 6 weeks, you'd do health.
Yeah.
And they'd separate the boys and the girls. I think starting in junior high, that's when you got them separately.
Oh.
Science Behind Drugs. There's an AIDS Alleviating Fears program. They've come such a long way with this Robert Crown Center. And every school goes there. I am shocked you guys didn't.
I think because yours was a public school and Steve was as well. We were a Catholic school. So
you came all the way into town, Steve Bertrand, from, is it Mantino? I always mess up where he's from.
Mantino, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
Steve's been told he cannot answer on.
Because that's a long bus ride to come in from there. You couldn't make it from Oakland, but I'm sure it's the Catholic school. They didn't want to teach you anything. They just said don't.
Right. That was
just don't.
That was kind of the majority of our. Well, they showed the girls films. Like every once in a while, the boys were shown a travel log. Like we showed what it would be like to be in Denmark. But then the girls.
What?
I'm not kidding. I know that sounds like I'm joking, but it's not. They would separate the boys and girls, and we were in one hall. There was a big hall that we had, and we were shown, like, various parts of Europe, a film, and we assumed the girls were seeing that, too. And all the guys are like, why wouldn't they show us this together? What's going on in Denmark that we can't see this with other girls? And then we later learned that the girls were shown, you know, about their changing bodies and stuff like
that. About their menstrual cycles?
Yeah. So, but I guess that's when I learned that the difference between boys and girls was that women's bodies are changing and that boys eventually will go to Denmark. I still haven't gone to Denmark.
Well, there was something in junior high that I think I went to see it when Michael, sixth grade, was showing you what was going to happen to your body.
Yeah.
Maybe it was seventh grade. And there was a stupid cartoon, and it was just around the corner. It was this weird, wacky song that went with it. And it was a cartoon that showed the changes in boys where all of a sudden you'd start sprouting hair under your arms and in various other on your upper lip, let's just say that. And then the girls, again, but it was all done in cartoon form. And I remember they invited the parents to come see it before their kids saw it in case anyone wanted to back out of it.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're going to learn something from this? Fine, whatever. It was so G-rated.
Of course.
It really was. Cindy is on the line. Hi, Cindy. How are you?
Oh, good. How are you?
Good. We only have a minute, but Robert Crown Center is a great place to learn things, isn't it?
It is, until they come home and tell you exactly what they learned.
Oh.
It was a very difficult conversation to have with your 13-year-old.
But the good news is that 13-year-old brought it up to you and opened up the lines of communication, because my mom never said a word to me about anything.
Oh, listen, let me tell you, it was one of those days where you're like, how'd your day go? And then after you said it, you're like, oh, boy.
But at 13, you're kind of ready to know that stuff at 13, probably a lot younger, maybe, huh?
Well, I'm sure they do, but you don't ask them what do they know.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
You know, so obviously, you know, you don't really get to that full conversation. But after they go to that, you do have the full conversation. There's no doubt about it. It did open up a huge communication with my children.
Which is awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I have an older daughter and I have three sons. And it's a lot easier as a mother to talk to your daughter. But it really did open the communication lines when it came to talking to all three of my sons.
Yeah.
Jimmy Mack will not talk to the boys. They ask me questions. I have to answer. I'll never forget this one time. Jim was coming home from work. I called him. I said, hey, where are you? He said, I just pulled in the driveway. What are you doing? And I said, I'm telling Michael about where babies come from. And Jim says, I'm pulling out of the driveway.
Good move. Smart move.
Thank you, Cindy. We appreciate it.
All right, let's take a quick break and then a lot more show. Crazy Kaplan will join us, the firework maven. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I hate to admit I love Katy Perry.
How can you not love Katy Perry?
I don't want to like her.
She's a national treasure.
And I found one of those crazy slideshows over the weekend that said she's a smoker, so she could light her fireworks with her cigarette.
That's economical.
Hey, guess who's on the line with us?
It's Crazy Kaplan, Greg Kaplan from Crazy Kaplan's. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you guys all doing?
We're doing great. You are the owner of Crazy Kaplan's. I'm sure we're not the only family to play the little fun Crazy Kaplan game. When you're driving, is it I-80? You count all the billboards, and I don't know, there might be like 50-something now.
Oh, there's probably a lot more than that. That's just the ones you're counting and you're seeing.
There's
probably a couple hundred out there.
I can't believe the advertising you put on those billboards. And please tell me that Crazy Kaplan picture is not based on you.
No, I'm a lot better looking than that guy is. But I did draw on this. It was going back probably 20, 25 years ago, because we're celebrating our 25th anniversary.
Congrats.
Right now. Yeah, it's exciting. It's been a long haul, and I hope we make it another good 25 more years.
How many fingers have been missing in those 25 years?
Oh, no.
Well, I got two stubs for hands, but it isn't from shooting fireworks. It's from working too hard.
Yeah, all right.
And you guys are open.
No, I still have my 8 fingers and 2 thumbs and just messed up brains.
Oh, that's fine.
We're trying to keep it all together as well as we can, because now's the big season and it's fireworks time and people are getting out and about and coming into the stores and buying lots of fireworks.
It's a week from today.
About
oh my God.
That, a week from today. You know what? I got a suggestion.
Yeah.
For anybody who is going to come to Crazy Kaplan's fireworks, the sooner you get here, the better selection you have, the happier my employees are, and the happier I am. But get out there and come early. Don't, you know, the later you come, the more people there is, and it's how do you call it? Full, you know?
Sure. That's the right word.
Fully stocked?
You know, it's a lot easier if you shop early. I'll leave it at that. You know, I mean, we welcome you anytime. Stores are open at 8 o'clock in the morning. We close at 10 o'clock at night. We're soon to go to 11 and midnight.
Jeez.
Only 6 shopping days left, Wendy. 6 shopping days till the 4th of July.
You know, it's like, it's funny because in December, you know, you go through the countdown for Christmas. You know, to Christmas Eve.
Right.
And I go to the countdown to the eve of the 4th of July.
Now, I know this is obviously your biggest weekend, and you've got a crazy, with a K, sale going on right now, too. Tell us about the sale.
Yeah, we've got 3-for-1 specials in our area, repeaters, our mortar shells. We've got an exclusive line called Sinister. They're just killer 60-gram canister shells. We've got buy one, get 6 free in the store specials. Everything throughout the store is buy one, get one free or better. We have the world's best selection, and our family assortments right now are the biggest sellers here at the end. They're all buy one, get one free.
You must be crazy.
I'm crazy. And you then have to be. If there's any left, we've ran Angie and Joe and Matt put this together. They've been with me a long time. $25 specials right at the door, right when you walk in. You'll be able to save money and fill up with $25 anniversary specials.
That's awesome. Greg Kaplan on the line with us, the owner and operator of Crazy Kaplan's. We had a lot of fun when we went in there, got a big shopping cart and filled our cart. And I have three boys, if you count my husband. They love doing fireworks. But this is a question that I don't know if I should ask. But why are they illegal in Illinois and not in Indiana?
Well, you know, the state of Indiana saw the opportunity, and I helped with the legislation with that. I'm on a board of directors with the Indiana Fireworks Association, and we helped lobby to get the state to approve the sale of boom-to-zoom fireworks in Indiana. And, I mean, that's kind of where my business benefits versus the state of Illinois, because people love fireworks. They have a lust for fireworks and a passion for fireworks. And to buy fireworks, it gives them the opportunity to come to Indiana, buy cheap gas, cheap cigarettes, and cheap fireworks.
That's a vacation come true.
I'm moving to Indiana. Yep. They're the state that works.
There you go. And cheaper property taxes.
Right.
Better schools. And come on over to Indiana. I've been a lifelong person in Indiana. I grew up here in Munster, right across the border. I've been here my whole life. And it's given me an opportunity to make a living and provide people with entertainment and enjoyment. And I think everybody loves what I'm doing.
And now talk about the safety, because obviously people who use fireworks at home have to be careful. We always do it. My husband, it's in the family. His father did it. So now my husband does it with the boys, but he supervises. The hose is always there. We're always prepared for anything that might happen. Is there something we need
to
know?
We'll start out, know what you're lighting. That's number one. Two would be, have some common sense. I mean, have a designated lighter, an igniter. You know, a person that hasn't been drinking, that is going to be careful, cautious. And depending upon what you're lighting, create a safety zone. Keep a distance. If it's bigger fireworks that go in the air higher and break bigger, obviously give yourself more distance. Not only distance in the air, with power lines, tree limbs, all that kind of stuff. If you're really lighting big stuff, look out for the low-flying planes. But
they don't go that high, do they, Greg?
No, I'm kidding.
I believe anything.
Okay, but, if the grandparents are there and there are fold-out web chairs or whatever, make sure that everybody has a safe distance there. And above all, common sense, common sense, common sense. It doesn't hurt to have a couple buckets of water around or a hose just in case a fire breaks out and something doesn't go completely out. But really, that's the main thing, and invite your neighbors over to help, to have an enjoy with them.
Yeah, because then they won't call the police then.
That's true, too.
There you go.
How do I know?
All sorts of fireworks that are called neighbor haters.
Neighbor haters. Neighbor haters.
Neighbor haters. The loud ones, and the ones that that upsets the person next door that has
sure.
the dog.
Yep.
And and even to the veterans with be respectful toward them. Some of them have the I can't think of it right now, the PTS, whatever it is.
Post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD.
There you go. Yeah, and be respectful toward them. That's all. And eventually, if you have a neighbor that has the disorder, let them know what you're doing. That's all. Mm-hmm. Inform them.
Greg, how do I know, Greg, as an observer, how do I know when watching fireworks when to say ooh and when to say ah? Is there a way that I can tell which I'm saying?
No, I would say continually say it because know that you're enjoying fireworks.
All right.
Can you say ah, yeah. ooh? I'm just curious.
It's supposed to be ooh, ah, I think.
Yeah. Well, what? They've come out with so many new effects, loud effects, whistling effects, colorful effects, different effects that do different things. There's a lot of oohing and ahhing.
Right.
Isn't blue the hardest color to come by because it has to burn hotter than the other colors, or am I imagining that?
Blue and purple.
Those are my favorite colors.
They're the hardest ones,
Wendy.
Go.
You know, they came out with a whole series of line right now that are pink and blue, and those have become a hot item, you know, for boys or girls or, you know, the gender.
Doesn't matter.
All fireworks are hot items when you think about it, or else they fizzle out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, from all the kids' stuff, even they've come out with pink smoke. Imagine that.
Oh.
They've got items now that have come out with pink smoke. They have daytime cakes that are smoke effect cakes. So there's a wide variety anymore. I mean, before, you know, it used to be your simple lines of Roman candles, firecrackers, bottle rockets. But now there's just such a wide array of the aerial repeaters, the big finale cakes, the nine-shot racks. I mean, this stuff wasn't out 10, 15 years ago. So you've got a better variety and much better performance to choose from today.
Mm-hmm. Think about when we were growing up, because my mom, we used to do those snakes that were really cool, and
they loved it. They loved to mess up your sidewalk.
Oh yeah, your driveway.
They're still marked now.
Yes.
From 40 years ago.
And the sparklers, right, with the metal pole that was burning like, you know, 7,000 degrees, and our parents let us play with those as kids. Those are probably the most dangerous things ever.
Yeah, I mean, the sparklers burn really hot. The wire sparklers. There's all sorts of different sparklers out now. That what we call morning glories that have a wood stick that,
yep,
completely burns down. There's another morning glory version that has a bamboo stick. So if the listeners out there are getting anything out of this, those might be the ones you want to go for because they completely burn. There's no hot wires or anything. And that's where the bucket of water might come into play. After you do burn the wire sparklers, drop them in the bucket.
And you get to hear a nice little tss.
There you go.
One of the most beautiful sounds of summer, Wendy.
The Greg, happy ending of burning a sparkler.
Yeah.
There you go.
Greg, fun to talk to you. There are 7 convenient Northwest Indiana Crazy Kaplan Fireworks outlets. Go in there for all your fireworks needs. Thanks, Greg. Have a great season.
Okay, you guys too. Enjoy.
Call me back. All right.
Come see us at Crazy Kaplan's Fireworks. Thank you.
Bye.
Sure. CrazyKaplan's.net and follow the billboards because there are now hundreds.
Hundreds of billboards.
I'm going to be counting them on the way to Nashville. It's going to be fun.
He's crazy. All right, we have to take a quick break. Stick around. More show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We just talked to Greg Kaplan of Crazy. He's put the crazy in Crazy Kaplan.
That guy's crazy.
I forgot to ask him about this thing. I showed it to you. We're going to put it up on our Facebook page, and I'm sure people have seen it. It's already up there. Go to Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Stairway to Heaven, I know that's been in the news lately because of that court case between Stairway to Heaven and Spirit Song Taurus, Led Zeppelin wins, rock on. There is this firework that is, all right, here, the video, they're blasting Stairway to Heaven, and then this firework ignites as it looks like it's a stairway going up into the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin ruined it for me because he said it looks more like a ladder.
It does, to his credit, it does look a lot more like a ladder than a stairway.
And that doesn't really work with the song.
Ladder to Heaven.
Doesn't sound as good.
Well, a stairway would have been tougher to build, and it turns out it is actually a ladder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Firework ladder to the sky.
I know, because, well, whatever. I just thought it was really cool to see, and then you made me overanalyze it, Kevin.
It is cool, but it's poorly named. It doesn't look like a stairway at all. It does look like a ladder.
Yeah, but you guys have ruined it. At the beginning, you just, I'm like, oh my God,
sure,
check this out. This is so cool. There's a guy, Kai Guaquang, used metal and gunpowder for this show that took place in China.
Who did this now? Kai Guaquang did this?
Don't ask me, yes. From now on, you have to say it.
All right.
It is technically a ladder.
Yeah.
Because I thought perhaps it was like a metal wire or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a ladder. It measures 18 feet wide. That's pretty wide.
That's very big, yeah.
And it was taken up using a hot air balloon. The artist drew a draft of the show 21 years ago when he visited Bath, England. And according to Mr. Kai's elderly grandmother who raised him, it was a labor of love. She's quoted in this story. Same artist designed the spectacular fireworks to open the Beijing Olympics.
That's where I've heard the name before. Those were spectacular.
I don't remember.
You don't remember those?
There was no stairway.
They didn't do that. They were saving that.
All right. Well, congratulations to Kai Guoquang.
You're saying that right.
You're saying it right.
All right.
You got it.
Well, check it out, because until Kevin ruined it for me.
It ruined the 4th of July for you.
It does. You know, you're in awe for a minute, because it's like, oh, wow, check this out. It looks like steps going up, and then it really is a ladder.
I know.
But it's still pretty cool. That's Kevin has a bad cold.
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Are you all right, Kevin?
Is that what you're mean?
What happened?
I'm just a realist, Wendy.
Yeah.
Summer colds are the worst. We should go get him some chicken soup or something.
That'd be nice.
All right. We'll fix you up, Kev. We have to do a quick break. Ryan will give you the news, and then an old friend returns to the show, Eric Zorn, the feisty Eric Zorn. Stay where you are, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Ryan. Hey, look who's back in the studio, Bill.
It's the feisty columnist for your Chicago Tribune, Eric Zorn. Eric, you know what was missing from our show last week was your feistiness. Without you here to be feisty.
I know. Mary Schmeek is brilliant, but she's not that feisty.
She's not feisty, no, but she did a nice job filling in
wonderful.
For you.
People should go back and listen to that podcast episode with Mary reading her column about when you lose your father.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Very touching, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was
really
going to read my column about nose hair trimmers.
Do it. Please do it.
You got to be careful, because if you remove too much hair in the winter, you breathe in the cold air and it really hurts.
See, it was my contention. I know it's not. This is not a Christmas. It doesn't feel at all like Christmas out there, but that the nose hair trimmer and the ear hair trimmer is the ideal gift. It really says that you care.
Yes. Yes, it does.
And it's really just little scissors.
It's not one of those gifts that's going to go unused. So anyway.
So true.
We'll talk about that as the holidays come around.
You actually had a very fun trip. You were telling Wendy and myself about this trip that you were on. Friends of yours from college just kind of getting back together and hanging out for a couple of days. That sounds like a good
time.
Yeah,
these are the three guys I lived with in college. And we've stayed in touch. And just in the last couple of years, we decided to get together again. We hadn't actually been in the same place since one guy got married, I think, in 86.
The four of us were together.
And we got together.
Just for some Kraft macaroni and cheese?
Is that what you got together for?
Yeah,
stovetop stuffing.
Right.
It's interesting how easily and quickly you just fall back into the old jokes, and how, you know, we've all gone in our different paths, but none of that stuff makes any difference. You know, the foundation is there, and there's no friendships quite like that. I think it was really great. We played golf and ate good food and sat around.
Oh, that's fun.
So it's really good.
Have your lives all gone in incredibly different directions, or are there some similarities?
Well, one thing that's interesting is we're still in our first marriages, which is pretty good. I mean, we have like 120 years so far
out of the four of us.
Yeah. And one guy's a recently retired high school teacher. Another guy's a chairman of the history department at a university down south. Another guy's a surgeon in Danville. So
now, did they all go on to do what they thought they were going to do when you lived with them in college?
Yeah, all of them except the high school teacher, who his whole career path, he was a very bright guy, and he was going to go into physics, and he went to graduate school in physics, and he discovered partway through it that he wasn't that interested in it, and he wasn't that. He said, you know what? The people who I'm in school with, he was at Madison. The people I'm in school with are really brilliant. You know, physicists, and I'm just good at this. And he said, I think I want to teach high school. And he sent out applications all over the country to places, and he became a private high school teacher. And he really liked that. He was really, really good at it. He showed me some of the stuff he got at his retirement, which was a couple of weeks ago. And the kids loved him. And it was like, it was one of the things where you sort of realize, at some point, you realize, you know, I'm good at this, but if I'm going to spend my life doing something, I want to spend it doing this. And he found his calling in teaching. So everybody found their calling. So
Did you write for the school newspaper at all?
In high school, no, but in college, you know, we're talking college. So yeah, in college I did. Yeah, that was my, in fact, I worked for the former editor of the Tribune, Ann Marie Lipinski. She was my editor at the Michigan
Daily.
Yeah. So,
it was pretty
fun.
And that's just a coincidence?
Yeah, a total coincidence.
Because
she got an internship here at the Tribune, and then a couple years later, I got an internship here. But we followed on.
I've heard over the years so many stories like the one you just told of somebody who's they think they want to be a lawyer, and they're studying, and then at some point a light bulb goes on and says, I don't know that I want to spend my life doing this. That's got to be a strange moment when you've geared up for something, some career for years, and then you just go, not for me.
The opposite thing happened to the other guy, which one of my other roommates, he was really into history. And you decided, that history, I can never make a living doing that. He went to law school then. He went and joined a big Chicago firm. And he and I had actually lived together in Chicago for a couple of years before we both got married. And he was working in corporate law here. And he decided, you know what? I hate this.
Really?
I love history. I hate this. He quit, went to grad school, got his PhD in history. And so it feels like, well, there was this like 8-year period where he was in law school and did this, but he got back on the right track.
Yeah.
So there's like a different paths. Of course, I've been at the same job for 36 years. So that's what,
wow, that's pretty rare.
That's what makes me so feisty.
I bet it does. I'm positive it does. Let's talk about what's going on the Republican side of things. You got a couple of prominent names at this point saying they're not interested in helping out Trump. You mentioned Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who is not throwing any endorsement Trump's way. But Wendy and I were talking earlier, not on air, off air, about George Will.
George Will, yes.
That one's a shocker to me.
He's
leaving the party.
Yeah,
he says, I'm done.
I get the feeling, you know, George Will, who is very, very smart, obviously. And he always uses words you got to look up. You know? It's a really bright writer and conservative guy. I think he's in this stage of his career where he doesn't really care anymore. He's just like, kind of like Obama in his presidency, like, I'm going to do what I want now.
Yeah.
He's 75. And I think he just said, you know what? Heck with this. I am not putting up with this. I am not going to get in line behind Trump. I thought it was a very interesting position that he staked out. With McConnell on ABC's This Week, they were asking him, or was it Meet the Press? It was one of those chat shows. I can't remember which one now, where they're saying, you know, are you going to endorse Trump? And he said, well, that's for the American people to decide whether he's going to be the president, whether he should be a good president. I thought, wow. Here's the leader of the Senate in your own party, and he's using that line that politicians always use when they just want to duck an issue.
Right.
Well, that's for the people to decide. The voters will make that decision. I'm not going to. I was like, it was so funny to me.
I mentioned this to Bill off the air. Paul Ryan didn't say it was a weird way around saying, I'm not supporting Trump, but I support our party. And then you wonder, with all these other people coming forth, is Paul Ryan going to change his mind? Are other people going to start coming forward and saying, no, I can't?
Well, there's still this movement, and I've written about it, and a lot of people have written about it, that there is a group of delegates, I think some 400 of them for the convention, who are really trying to see if they can change the rules. And I think it's with political parties, you know, they can make their own rules. When they come to the convention, they can say, you know, oh, you can only vote if your first name begins with A through F. You know, anything. Oh, yeah, they can make whatever. It's a private organization. They're not bound by the results of these primaries necessarily. Now, I think it would be, you know, massively disruptive and to the party and divisive and everything else if they were to say, you know, the primary, yeah, Trump won more than 50% of the vote in the primaries, but we're going to give the nomination to Ted Cruz or John Kasich or someone else because we don't like Trump. But there's a real feeling that because of the positions that Trump has staked out and the positions that he's changed, that he's not a reliable Republican, that he could have kind of run as a Democrat if he had changed just a few positions. And the people say, well, we don't want to give over our party to this guy. So when they, at the run-up to the convention, they could change the rules. And the idea that they're looking for is the so-called conscience clause, which is you can vote your conscience. You're not bound any longer by the results of the primary. So they would say to the Illinois delegation, on the first ballot, you can vote. I mean, and Trump won here by, I think, you know, he won a plurality. I don't think he won a majority here. I can't remember the result. I'm like 39%.
I'm like blocking that. It out.
But yes, I've drink to forget. And so they could just say, you know, vote for who you think would be the best party nominee right now. And this of course, would be a throwback 60, 70 years to when conventions were pretty much just that. They were the party all gathered and said, who do you think's the best guy to run?
But at this point, doesn't it become sort of suicidal almost to do something that disruptive?
Well, you can imagine. Well,
and they shouldn't do that. They shouldn't.
Wendy, the voice of reason.
Well, it's just you're saying screw you to the
question,
party.
Though, but Wendy, the question is, what does the party mean? What does it mean to be a Republican? Does Donald Trump, is he the standard bearer? Is he the guy who represents the party and its values?
No, but they shouldn't have let him get this far. It's like you can't just.
Well, isn't this a bigger question, though, about what do we let voters decide? And I think, and this gets into this whole thing with Brexit, right?
Yeah.
Where they ask these voters in England, okay, do you want to stay in the European Union or not? And they all get all worked up and they vote. And then of course, Google reports that during and after the vote, everyone's Googling, like, what's the European Union? What does it mean if we leave? And they're realizing that there's all kinds of consequences for this. I think the Donald Trump vote in the primary was largely a protest vote. It's like, we don't like the way things are going on. It's a vote against business as usual. But I'm not sure that it is a vote for all of what Trump stands for and who he is. I mean, he's a bully and a blowhard, and people like that authoritarian quality in him. But I can see if I'm a Republican delegate, do I want this? Is this guy represent me? If I'm a member of this party, this is my standard bearer. Is he the guy who represents my values, my political positions? And I from a lot of Republicans, that answer is no. I talk to them all day up in the office. You know, I sit around a bunch of them, and they are bemoaning what Trump stands for and what he says.
How about this delegate from Virginia who wants to sue because he doesn't believe, despite the fact that Virginia, by rights now, he has to cast a vote for Donald Trump. He wants to sue and say, I'm not doing that. I don't believe in this. I don't want to do it.
I don't see what the basis for a lawsuit would be, because this is a private organization. This is what people forget about political parties, is that they have these primaries, but in some ways they're just for show.
Yeah,
they're not bound by them.
Right.
They can always just say, you know, the party's changed his mind.
But they do little things like, remember when the field of Republican candidates was a lot bigger and they had all the candidates sign a piece of paper saying, even when you're not our presumptive candidate, you'll still support it. Well, what do you do with that piece of paper, really? Is anybody going to take anybody to court because they've changed their mind and said, you know, I have time to think about it. I'm not going to do it.
It would be for show. You might be able to if there was some sort of condition. I'm not an expert in contract law. I know that was part of my introduction before, but it's actually not true. I regret that. That I made you say that.
No, that's all right.
But I think that there might be a basis for a lawsuit based on some sort of a breach of contract or promise, but you can't. The political parties can do what they want, and that's what's going to be interesting in the next month. So.
Yep. Eric Zorn is here. Boy, is he feisty. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. He is crazy, too. Boy.
Greg?
Yeah, he's crazy. Eric Zorn is here. He's feisty.
With an F.
Everyone has an adjective.
Everybody I'm bitchy. Has an adjective.
Are you itchy?
I said bitchy.
Oh, I thought you said itchy. Neither of them are good.
Well, that's life.
I'll put away the baby powder then.
There's a couple of words, by the way, speaking of words, that you take issue with, Eric, and those words are?
Well, one word is corrupt. I feel like it's thrown around way too often to describe people you disagree with in politics. Bruce Rauner's been calling Madigan and Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton corrupt. Donald Trump's been saying Hillary Clinton is corrupt.
Yeah.
And corruption is a crime. You know, it's it's not just a thing. I think it's not a word you just throw around and say, he's been in politics for a long time and he's made a lot of deals. And it's interesting. I wrote this yesterday, and there was a Supreme Court decision just this morning where they overturned a corruption conviction for the Virginia governor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically because he had been involved in all these kind of shady deals. But the Supreme Court was saying, look, you know, you can't, you know, he was like taking gifts from this guy and he was setting up meetings for him and stuff. And the Supreme Court basically said, look, you know, this is what politicians do. They set up meetings, they do favors for people. And if you criminalize all that, if you make it a crime, then every politician is going to be at the mercy of prosecutors around the country. So I think corruption, to call somebody corrupt, I mean, you can say you don't like their views. You can say they're compromised. You can say they have conflicts of interest. But I think the word corrupt is thrown around way too much. The other phrase that I was on my high horse about was, special interests. When you talk about, you know, the special interests are in Washington and they're taking your rights away. And the other day, Governor Rauner was complaining he had a Juneteenth. A week ago, we had a Juneteenth celebration and that he had planned, and some protesters had threatened to disrupt it. So he said the special interests have gotten together and ruined my celebration. And I'm thinking, you know, what interest is there? It's not a special interest. I mean, people use this term to describe, basically they use it to describe organizations and people they disagree with. And well, your interests are noble interests, general interests.
Sure, of course.
And everybody else is a special interest. And the truth is that the clash of interests is really what democracy is all about. Like, you know, your interests, your
right,
you know, things that you believe in, and you do battle with the things other people believe in, and you can't say, well, what I believe in, those are the good interests, and what other people believe in, those are the dreaded special interests.
Right.
So I'm urging people, and you know, that's, I'm on my campaign to get rid of certain words in politics. The other one that I don't like is reform. People always talk about reform. I'm going to reform these laws. We're going to do pension reform, and in the word reform, it suggests a change for the better.
Right.
But
that's so the, implied so, just so the, by virtue of the
so
word
the word
itself
is argumentative.
Yeah.
It says, you know, I want, they say they want workers' compensation reform. Well, they're going to make changes in the workers' compensation law. Are they going to propose them? But some people are going to say that's deform. That changes things for the worse. And it's fine for a politician to use it to say, well, I want this reform because the obvious suggestion is that you're going to make things better. You know, Pat Quinn, the reformer. But it's, I don't think it's at all fine for people who are writing the news and even analyzing the news to throw that word around just casually, like, oh, we need pension reform. Well, who's to say that your idea of a change is actually going to make things better? And the term itself suggests improvement. So,
what about this one, political outsider? It's become very much in vogue to claim that your candidate is a political outsider, meaning they're not part of the machine.
I mean, they don't know how things work very well.
Right. That's the downside of being a political outsider.
I mean,
right?
One of the problems that Governor Rauner's had, I think, is that he doesn't really know how politics works. Now, government and politics are all intertwined. And to get things done, you have to know how to work these deals. And it's not like being, you know, an equity investor like he is, who goes into companies and takes them over and says, this is how we're going to run things from now on. And, you know, my way or the highway. And so you bring people, I mean, politics is an art form in a way, and I'm not saying that everybody who has to be steeped in it forever, but the idea that you can come in from the outside, I mean, you guys must hear this all the time. People are like, oh, you just sit on the radio and talk all day? That must be really easy. I could do that. Well, actually, you probably couldn't do that. It's pretty hard to do a good radio show, right? And people say to me, oh, gosh, a columnist, I could do that. Like, well, yeah,
you
could do a couple maybe, but it would be, you know, it's
not every day.
Yeah.
For
so,
36
so
years.
So this idea that someone can just come in from the outside, like, oh, I have no experience in how, you know, all the intricacies of government, how it all works, especially the presidency, you know, with all the foreign policy issues that you need to know about. And just, oh, I can just use common sense to run this. I think it's
right.
Really crazy. Hey, speaking of common sense, look who's walked into the studio.
I don't know who that is.
Michael.
It's Steve Bertrand, your friend Steve.
My friend Steve.
He's got the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's what brings him here.
My
Eric.
Podcast mate, Steve Bertrand.
Thank you. We appreciate it. It's Eric Zorn, his triumphant return. You can read Eric in the Chicago Tribune anytime you want. We'll stick around. We'll find out what Steve has coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Ryan. Ryan, if you can, stick around for a second, because Wendy and I want to pelt you with questions.
Okay.
Are you ready to...
I'm ready to be pelted.
So it's going to be a question pelting of Ryan Burrow. Hi, welcome to the second half of our show. I'm Bill, and that's Wendy.
Hi, Bill. I'm
hi.
Wendy.
Hi,
you're
Wendy.
Bill.
It's nice to meet you. 312-981-7200, if you'd like to talk to Wendy or myself or pelt Ryan Burrow with questions. You were just in Disney World for the first time as a family. Your wife and kids and you were just in Disney World, right?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, yeah.
Which right. I didn't realize we were there at exactly the same time, Ryan.
Yeah, I left was at the Saturday the 11th and then went through all the way to the next Friday.
And a lot of strange things happened, a lot of horrible things happened while both of you were in Disney World separately. You had the girl from The Voice that was shot by a stalker. You had the Pulse nightclub tragedy. And then you had the little boy that was eaten by an alligator.
He wasn't eaten. They found his body intact.
Right, right.
He was
drowned by an alligator.
Yes.
Right. All right. Now, that aside, because each one of those things is just a horrendous event, no doubt about it, but to have three of those things happen within a four-day span is unheard of. But I want to ask you specifically about something that I've been reading about in Disney World. There's a new ride that's the Frozen ride. It's at Epcot Center.
Let it go.
And... they're saying that this ride, which just opened a week ago, has lines every single day of at least 5 hours to go on a ride that's less than five minutes long.
Oh, my God.
That's incredible. It wasn't open when I was there.
Oh, it wasn't
open
for you?
No, we went through Epcot because if I'm correct, it's in Norway, right?
It is, yeah.
It's in Norway. We saw the fence up there. They were getting ready to let it go, if you will, but... I didn't get a chance to see it. Didn't open. I can tell you the big ones that when I was there, and Wendy, you probably saw this too, the Soarin', they were just wrapping up the California version of the Soarin' ride.
And now it's going to be international.
So I think that was like a 2 hour wait. And then that Seven Dwarves mine train was super
long
too. But no, I did not see the Frozen one.
What's the Soarin'?
Soarin' is you feel like you're hang gliding.
Oh, Soarin'.
Yeah.
I don't know
why. Not
I
like from Lord of the Rings.
And I think everything at Hollywood Studios will be Star Wars within like a year, right? They're changing. I think someone told me that Tower of Terror is going away for something. They're going to put up some Star Wars thing there, too.
I'm trying to remember what they're toying with changing it into.
Death Star of Terror. That's what they're changing it to. Although, may I say something? Because we went down, because Jimmy Mack, my husband, has a podcast, Rebel Force Radio. You can hear it on this WGNplus.com. So he met up with about 75 listeners there, did a live podcast. And I was shocked to find out that there was no Star Wars weekend, because this has been going on for like 15 years, I'm told.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't have it this year. And they're not going to probably have it next year, but they are going to be changing Hollywood Studios into Star Wars land, basically. Why would you stop the weekends? Wouldn't you want to keep the hype going?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the thought process was there.
That's stupid.
Well, there's a lot of research. And if there's one thing I learned about Disney, there's a lot of research. There's a lot of thought going on as to who is where at what time. I mean, those magic bands are insane. I mean, when I was in line for the Aerosmith ride, while I was standing.
The Rock and Roller Coaster?
Cool ride. Yeah, the Roller Coaster ride, which was really cool. On the screen, it flashes, performing tonight, Ryan Burrow from Palatine, Illinois. I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? How do they know this?
Magic band.
I know, because I scanned it, and boom.
You should have seen what it said when you went to the bathroom.
The Haunted Mansion, my sister's name popped up on the RIP. I don't mean to, you know, I don't mean to ruin anyone's fun, but I couldn't believe it.
I wish I would have gotten a magic band. We didn't get them this year.
Yeah.
I want to see my name there.
There's already online, because the new Frozen ride just opened a couple of days ago. As you would imagine, people have videotaped it, and it's already on YouTube. But I don't want to see it. I want to wait. I want to wait the 5 hours like everybody else, and then go through it.
Tell me the truth. I mean, would you really? If your little girls were little, would you wait 5 hours? That's
such
your whole
a long
day.
Time. Yeah, that's the majority. Right,
for little kids, because we push it now. Our new thing is you go like at 2 p.m, and then you have no problem staying till midnight, because the sun goes down. And it's really the smart way to do it.
Yeah,
but when you have little kids, and I'm just remembering from the past. They can't last till midnight.
Boy,
energy levels that whole trip were different. You know, they were fluctuating. I mean, we'd start off, we'd be raring, and by noon, and it was so oppressively hot. I mean, it was 95 degrees plus the humidity. I mean, you're just looking for any kind of Hall of Presidents to duck into
And kids love that.
That's the only way I got mine in there.
Kids love that.
It's cool.
The heat, absolutely.
And I can add to the frustration of the Frozen ride. It's a new ride, so. The systems keep breaking down. The computers keep breaking down. So there's a journalist that just wrote about it over the weekend saying, imagine standing in a line for 3, 3.5, 4 hours. And then right as you're about to get to the close part, the last hour, the home stretch, they explain, sorry, folks, but we're having some problems with the computer system. We're going to shut down for a while. We hope to have the ride back up and running later in the day. But there's no guarantee. You can wait there if you want.
And listen, I know they try their best.
Yeah.
Jim's partner on Rebel Force Radio, Jason, brought his family. First time they've ever gone, just like you, Ryan.
Yeah.
And they arrived. They took the shuttle from the hotel, arrived to take the monorail to get into the park. And the monorail was out of service.
Mm-hmm.
It took them 90 minutes. To get into the park.
Right.
That is their first introduction to Disney.
Yeah, that's not good.
The monorail's the first ride, right?
It usually is
for a lot of people. That's your first ride.
But it took them 90 minutes from when they arrived to get in the park.
Right, that's terrible.
I told them to write a letter because Disney, they would do something about it.
I wonder.
Their very first trip ever. You know, you want to start a relationship with Disney World that you're going to continue to come year and year again.
Yeah, why not? Write the letter and hope for the best. Ryan, I know you said the monorail is the first ride. I remember our first year there when I was a kid, and it was the year they opened, 1971. We stayed at the same place you just stayed at, the Polynesian. And what they would do is they would pick you up on like that almost like a golf cart and drive you to your room. And for my brother and I, that was our first ride. We loved that ride. We kept saying, we got to go on that hotel room ride again.
Yeah,
we enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was kind of cool because you could either take the monorail. We took the boat back and forth too because it kind of comes across. But
now, when you were there, you had the search parties looking for the kid with the alligator story. Did you have to explain that to your kids? What did you say to your kids?
It was So we were watching the Electric Parade that night. We were actually on the beach. I'm sure my kids were touching their feet into the water there. And we were, you know, probably about a quarter mile down the shoreline. And all of a sudden the helicopter started flying overhead pretty much at the end of the Electric Parade. And we didn't know what was going on. Something was in the water, obviously. And, you know, we just watched it continue to circle. And, you know, the thing about where we were is you could see the fireworks from the Magic Kingdom. So yeah. A lot of people just hung out and, you know, kept watching for the fireworks and not really knowing what's going on. But, you know, the more and more flashing lights you saw, you knew something was up. And then I think the Orlando Sentinel hit it on Twitter with what was going on. And I think by that morning, most adults knew, and it's not something we talked about very much because, you know, we didn't want to freak out the kids.
How old
obviously.
Are your kids?
I've got a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
The 8-year-olds, we kind of let her know. We never really told the 4-year-old what was going on. That morning after, they weren't allowing anyone on the beach at all. So,
and were you there when the new signs were posted about alligators?
You know, I actually saw them driving in the fence post at the Grand Floridian. We could see them starting to put that in, you know, at the very tail end of our trip, but they weren't allowing us to go on the beach at all.
Was it creepy? Wendy and I were saying last week how there's at least 4 rides that we can think of where alligators are featured fairly prominently in the ride. Everything from Peter Pan to
Splash Mountain.
Splash Mountain
and even in that Electrical Parade, the thing that kind of tails all the sea monster is an alligator.
Yeah, it is.
So they
didn't change any of that, right?
No. You know the stories there. I mean, everything, it's the happiest place on earth. You know what I mean?
It isn't, though. I'm sorry. I saw so many families fighting. This was the first year we weren't fighting. I mean, there's so much pressure to get everything in. As Brian mentioned, it's so hot. Whoever thinks to go to Florida in June, gosh, I don't know why we did that, because it's so hot.
We used to go in, when I was a kid, we'd almost always go in August. It was like the last 2 weeks of our...
Before school?
Yeah. And it was hot all day, every day, but you just do your best to stay as cool as you can.
But it is not the happiest place on earth. Every family is fighting. I saw some mom really spank the heck out of some kid.
Her own kid or just a random kid?
Well, then you've got to make those desperation choices on the fast passes sometimes. You know, do we go on this ride? Do we ditch this and try that instead? Of course, you know, the kids want to go on separate things. So,
and I have to laugh.
It's always a test.
Bill, you said you'd go on the Frozen ride. I like Haunted Mansion. I like Splash Mountain. I was forced into going because, you know, the boys and Jim were just like, Mom, you've got to go.
Sure.
And now I actually enjoy it. But it's so funny to hear my boys fight about, we got to go to the Little Mermaid. No, but the Tiki Room closes at 9. And it's like so endearing for me to hear that because it's like, I don't care. Once you see it once, I mean, I don't understand the repeat performances of everything.
I have to tell you, I think the most, if anyone's planning a trip right now, the Frozen sing-along is totally worth it. You know, my daughter might be a little old for princesses, but it is so funny. And, you know, there's a lot of cool things that go. That was the one that we walked away with going, wow, that was
And where is that? Because I don't remember ever that being.
The Frozen sing-along is at Hollywood Studios.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. Is that when they have the...
They've got basically 2 comedians who run through the entire storyline, and it's so funny. And, you know, before they get into the big one, they go, Dads, this one's for you. And then all the kids are saying, it's fantastic. So.
I cried right near Space Mountain. They had, like, this little patio area that was all lit up, and they had a band there. And they said, who's going to be the best dancer? And all these little girls and their little princess outfits were there. Some were dancing with their dads, and I am just standing there watching, crying, and my boys are all laughing at me. There she goes. I said, I'm sorry, it's just the sweetest, most innocent moment I've ever seen.
You should have seen my son with Chewbacca. First of all, we got in line for Kylo Ren, and he was terrified because you turn the corner and there's Kylo Ren there, and, you know, he's towering. And then we went in line for Chewbacca, and you'd think that he'd be afraid of Chewbacca too, but he's like, hey, Chewbacca, go hit those buttons. Go do that. Chewbacca's like, he turned around and started hitting the buttons.
Chewie's cute and cuddly.
Yeah, I guess.
When my daughters were little, there was a character breakfast that we took them to. So then you wait in line so you can have your picture taken with Snow White or Cinderella. So the girls were 3 at the time, and their impression of all these girls, now they don't realize, spoiler alert, that they're actresses dressed up to be these princesses. And
they
my daughter's
the
eyes.
Real deal.
So on every one, they'd walk away and they'd go, Sleeping Beauty is so nice. And we go, yeah, of course she's nice. I mean, she really is very, very nice. They were so impressed by how nice all the princesses were.
That's so fun. It's such an innocent time, but it is not the happiest place on
earth. Not always. Sometimes. Not always. A quick break, and then a lot more show. Thanks, Ryan. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I know. We just got a text. We're at 312-981-7200. We just got a text from somebody saying that they're dreading, well, our discussion is making them dread their trip to Disney World. That's not our intention at all. I love going there. And you're coming
I've
around.
I've turned the corner.
Yeah.
Because I know you, I always would say to you, Bill, why do you have to go more than once? And right. You truly love it, and your daughter Kylie especially.
Yeah, she's big into it. Reese and my wife are just, they're fine with it. It's not their favorite place, but yeah, Kylie and I have put in a lot of hours.
This year, you know, Dylan, my son Dylan, is so invested in it. And, you know, I said, what do you like about Disney? And he goes, everything. And then finally, I had like a really good time. We didn't get in a fight for the first time in 4 years. It was really a pleasurable day. And I said, Dylan, I finally get it. And he said, what? And I said, I now know what the magic of Disney is. And
did the skies open and angels come down? Yeah.
Absolutely. Speaking of Frozen, here's another goofy thing I found on the internet that I really would like to share with people. If you could Google it, or we could put a link on our page. You know when you have a Slurpee or ice cream and you eat it too quickly and you get I had my first Dole Whip this trip too.
Those are incredible, aren't
but
they?
But I got a brain freeze.
Yeah.
Because it was so good I couldn't control myself.
Yeah.
There's a video on Facebook of cats licking ice cream and Mr. Freezes. Bill, I know you're not a cat lover to own in your house.
Right.
And I feel bad laughing at these poor cats, but they're like licking ice cream and then all of a sudden the brain freeze kicks in. And they just freeze. They just are paralyzed
so
for a moment.
So that's a sensation that lasts, that takes place in other animals. I always wondered if it was only humans, but it could also affect a cat.
There's this one little...
That's why cats don't drink Slurpees, for that reason specifically.
There's this one little fuzzball. It looks like a an Angora cat or something, and it's licking some kind of an orange Julius or something.
Yeah.
And it just freezes in its place, and the orange starts oozing out of its mouth because it's just like they freeze, and then let's get back to business.
I've only gotten them, and I always have called them brain pains, but I guess brain freeze sounds better, but brain pain rhymes, so I went with it. I have only gotten them from Slurpees, nothing else, but I know people have gotten them just from ice cream or really cold drinks, but it's to me only a Slurpee is what does it. And when I get one, it's
debilitating.
It's bad. It's really bad.
What about slush puppies? Because I've gotten them on slush puppies.
Same thing.
I like those better than Slurpees.
Frozeny drink.
They're like little ice pellets.
And your way of solving it is what? Do you know how to?
Yeah, you're supposed to caress the soft palate of your mouth with your tongue.
Well, with your tongue, yeah.
Yeah, you just kind of go like that because that's. That diffuses it or something.
I've done a thing where I just keep blowing into my hand really fast. Almost
and then
like,
you faint and don't feel the brain pain.
It's almost like Lamaze class for me. I've actually had a child on more than one occasion just because of the Slurpee. But you just keep, you put your hand up to your mouth and you just keep blowing really, really fast into it. And that somehow makes the brain pain go away.
Yeah, why would that work? I don't understand.
I think it's
I think it's because you're getting...
carbon dioxide.
You're getting like warm air back. Like for every push out, you're getting one back in that's warm. You know what I mean? I don't know how that happens. Like that.
Oh, you just had another baby.
Oh my God.
Congratulations.
Proud father. But so, and it's, there's like no way of telling when I'm going to get one or not. Like I've always thought.
Like I even get them sometimes when I'm drinking it slowly. It's
yeah,
just every once in a while, there are some remedies for it. I will search it because they do say drink a glass of warm water, but it's tickling that soft palate in the back of your mouth, either with your finger or tongue.
But you can, I mean, I know we're kidding and calling it a brain freeze or a brain pain, but you
can
feel it in your brain. You can feel that sensation in your brain, can't you?
Yeah, but you got to see these cats.
It's
sad,
really?
But I can't stop laughing. And then they're so stupid because they go right back
to
eating.
Yeah, go for
it.
More, like I do with a Slurpee. Like right at like seconds after I have one, I go, boy, was that painful. Just keep drinking. A quick break. Steve with the news. More show, Bill and Wendy, WGN. What does this music put you in the mind of? When you
spooky
hear this
scary.
Spooky scary, right?
and strange and oddities.
Oh, this is perfect, Wendy. I have a story that will scare and entertain you all at the same time.
Love it.
This is a story out of Iowa, but that is not the scary part. Police in Iowa are asking the public for help after receiving a series of unsettling reports about men dressed all in black wandering onto the road in remote areas. We have several reports of men dressed in black entering the roadway in rural Muscatine County, said the Muscatine County Sheriff's Office. While the report caused a flurry of interest on social media, the department told the Des Moines Register that it had at least three reports of sightings.
That's freaky.
Yes.
And they don't have reflective tape on, so...
No. They just have outfit black, dark black outfits, but no reflective tape. And I put this out there to any creeps listening. If you're going to walk around the streets, put some reflective tape on because it gets dangerous.
We're big with creeps.
What helped the story take off was the image that the department used on its Facebook post. It's a silhouette of the Nightmare Before Christmas character Oogie Boogie. Did you ever see him?
I've seen Nightmare
He's
Before
the,
Christmas.
Sort of the heavy set, ghosty looking guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, thank you.
People are always more attracted to your post if you use a photo, says Sheriff C.J. Ryan. While the sightings have started to take an urban legend flavor, others insist that they have also seen these figures. My son has experienced this, and it is no joke, Beatrice Wilson Strong told a local NBC station, WQC. It was a very frightening experience for him. People have reported men in black wandering into their yards.
Now that station. I can't say this on the air because somebody's going to do it just to mess with me. But
what?
We have a window in a certain area of our house, and whenever I look out at it, I always imagine some creepy figure just popping up.
But
at
it's
me.
Never happened.
No, but I can
it could.
See. Kind of your mind freaks you out sometimes.
Right.
To actually see it would really creep me out.
Well, it seems likely that this could be some sort of a prank. The sheriff's department has asked people.
Be?
It could be.
God, the Muscatines. How many are there? Three?
I'm just taking notes. Wendy, what time are you in front of that window?
See, that's why I didn't want to reveal which window it was. Because someone's going to do that now.
Right. They are asking people, the sheriff's department is asking people to call 911 if they encounter any of these mysterious men. Now, here's what this reminds me of. I think you'll remember this. About a year and a half ago, in several places, people decided to creep people out by dressing like clowns and just walking around town.
That wasn't here, though. That was London, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah, it was in England.
Before the Brexit?
Yeah, this was prior to Brexit.
There are no clowns in London now.
Right.
Only
the
sad
clowns
ones.
Have pulled out of the...
Going, what did we do? What did we vote for?
They've pulled out of the CU, the Clowns Union, and it's all changed. But it's similar because these were people who had it in their mind, and I get this. I appreciate this. I'm just going to scare people for no reason at all. I'm just going to walk around like a clown. But now these guys in Iowa, where I guess clown costumes are hard to come by, are just dressed in dark outfits.
I'm sure you could get a clown outfit in Iowa.
Somewhere in Iowa. Maybe the bigger cities.
I am so easily scared, as you witnessed when you hid below the... the console right here.
Yeah.
And again, I should have seen you, but I didn't expect you to be there.
Right.
Where's
that's
Bill?
But that's the fun of it.
It's
is
not
you wanna...
fun for the person being scared. Yesterday I came home and I was walking into the kitchen and all of a sudden this stick appears and blocks my walkway and I was like, oh, it was like instant limbo. Dylan got a walking stick. My sister took him to Brookfield Zoo and he got a walking stick,
uh-huh.
which is just another thing for him to hit his brother with.
But, is that how he sold it to your sister?
No, I hope
I'm almost
not.
Completely out of things to hit my brother with. Can I just please get a stick?
But I
please?
Was walking to go in the kitchen, and all of a sudden he just thought it would be fun to put the stick up and scare me.
Oh,
and
sure.
It was not fun for me. For him, very much fun.
Yeah. Well, it can't be fun for everybody.
It's
going to be fun for some and not for others.
Although, I'm going to tell you what I told Dylan yesterday. One of these days, I'm going to have a heart attack and you're going to feel terrible.
Right.
What's that going to stop him?
I know. He's going to do it more.
Do you remember the story a couple years ago about these kids? And I don't remember where the story took place, but it was like a rural road. So what they would do is one of them would lay in the street and they put like fake blood, like ketchup and stuff. And then the other one would pretend that it was feeding off of the person laying in the street. So then when a car passes by... what they see is somebody laying on the ground and another person cannibalizing them, and they thought this would be the funniest thing in the world. But it almost caused a huge accident because cars, you know, you see something like that, you're not used to that.
Well,
you're not
so
going to handle it well.
And you take your eyes off the road.
Right, right.
Because you do a double, triple, quadruple
take.
What am I
seeing? What am I seeing here on a rural road, you would say to yourself.
Oh, my God. I never heard about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have had to clean my car.
No, I know. I like to mess with people, but I wouldn't do it like that because that could. There's no telling what could happen from that. That car, you could steer right into the zombie and go, oh, I don't want a zombie eating people in my town. Not here, not on my watch. And then you just kind of mow them down.
See, because that's what you should do. When you see a zombie,
right.
Hit them.
Right.
And crush their head.
It's the first thing they teach you in driver's ed now. If you're driving along and you see a zombie, first stay in your own lane. But if the zombie enters your lane, mow them down.
You have the right of way if the zombie enters your
right.
lane.
That's how it goes.
All right, Casey wants to jump in on this. Hi, Case. Stacy.
Tracy. How are you?
Oh, okay. Kevin has a cold. His ears are clogged.
It's all right. No big deal. My four grandparents are actually all buried in Muscatine, and my mom and dad are from Muscatine. And speaking of the subject, last week my husband put on my Facebook post that it maybe isn't more likely a ghost than a man, and it's probably one of my grandparents.
Oh,
there's
good.
One specific that he was thinking of, so it's kind of funny that you're talking about this because it kind of hits home this time. So, and we haven't been back since my last grandparent has been buried. So
oh no!
Never know. It could be one of them.
Well, it probably is to say, "Come and see me, Tracy.
Come visit." As far as you know, is this a problem there in Muscatine? Is this the thing that everyone in town is talking about, or are they just laughing it off?
They're just laughing it off. My mom and dad are going actually next week, and she was talking to one of her aunts to see her. She's in the hospital, and they just think it's kind of funny. Everybody in the town thinks it's funny. It's not, you know, big deal. So.
Right.
Funny till you get there.
Yes.
Oh, right. And it's funny that you guys are talking about it just because in my family, we all thought it was pretty funny. But, you know, nobody else, if they don't know the small town, you know, it's right on the Mississippi River. So then, you know, my grandparents, my one is buried kind of out of the river. So my dad's like, well, maybe he's coming, you know, out of the river or something like that. So,
beautiful.
But, yeah. So thanks for talking about it. And you guys have a great show.
Thanks, Tracy. Appreciate it.
We've got to personalize this radio show a little bit more for all your hometowns.
Right.
Thanks, Trace.
Yeah, right.
Can I ask a stupid question? And I don't know the
Why?
Answer to
That's
this.
That's my role.
Oh. Is it illegal? Let's say I wanted to, and I don't. I'm not going to do this. This is just hypothetical.
I would never do that.
This is hypothetical. Let's say, because I like to stay up late, right? Let's say I just want to dress in a scary outfit and walk up and down the blocks around my house. Is that illegal to do that?
No.
I could do that, couldn't I?
If you're not in the street.
No, I would walk right down the middle of the street.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Like
then.
Dressed like a scary Quaker. right, walk around town like that. Could
I don't
I
think
do
that's
that?
Illegal, is
I
it,
think
Steve?
That would fall under creating a public menace, the...
Oh.
Umbrella.
But he didn't mean to.
I didn't hurt
so
anybody.
Who's to say that it's a menace to, you know?
But he did mean to if he's wearing a scary costume.
Well, it's just a scary Quaker outfit.
Yeah, a scary Quaker outfit.
Mm-hmm. Does the hair flip up under the hat?
Yeah.
That's scary.
Well, all right.
So I think that's
public
menace.
Illegal?
I don't know. Really, I don't know. But I bet if the coppers thought you were just trying to be freaky and scare people out.
That's illegal then.
They might escort you home or something, yeah.
I don't think you'd get arrested. Cuff him off. You know, you just go home, dude. Aren't you Bill Leff?
Yeah, right.
Again, cuff the Quaker.
Right. That's a fun game. That's how you know summer's here. Time to play Cuff the Quaker.
What's a 1072? That's a Cuff the Quaker.
Some people want to jump in with these stupid things they tried to do to scare people.
Oh,
can
excellent.
We take these
Yeah,
after the
please.
Break?
Yeah, give us a call or a text. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, we're telling you the story of what's going on there in Muscatine County in Iowa.
When did you start smoking?
I don't smoke.
Rod Serling did.
Oh, he did, didn't he? He did.
Submitted for your emphysema.
Sorry. Submitted for your emphysema? All right, so there's guys walking around Muscatine County, Iowa, dressed all in black, just walking around the roadways, and nobody knows quite what to make of these guys. Why are they doing this? What exactly does this mean? It's similar to what happened in England a little over a year ago, where guys would just dress like clowns and walk around.
I'm more scared of the clowns. If I saw a clown, that would scare me more.
So there's you're in an alley, and one way is a clown, a creepy clown, and the other one is just a creepy guy dressed in a black outfit. You go to the black outfit guy.
Once you go black outfit,
you never go back. You never go back.
All right, Eddie, you know what's going on? You saw one of these somewhere else?
Oh, yeah, hi.
Hi,
Eddie.
How you doing? Yeah, I just caught the tail end of your show here, and about 2 or 3 weeks ago, my wife and I were driving through near Shawnee, Wisconsin on Highway 29, and just happened to notice this figure or person walking along the highway, and it reminded me of one of those Dementor things from Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just creepy. It was dusk out. It was still light enough, so it wasn't completely dark. And we passed this thing, and my wife and I just looked at each other, and we were like, did we just see that? We actually got off the highway, drove back around, and again to make sure we weren't losing our mind. It was the weirdest thing. And we took a picture of it. So.
And the ones in Wisconsin are just like the ones in Iowa, except the ones in Wisconsin are wearing bowling shoes. That's the only difference.
Oh, okay. Yep. This fella had boots on.
Oh, he did?
I remember. And, like dreadlocks, just really creepy. Yeah,
wow.
Anyway. Yeah, so it's here too, apparently.
I guess.
What is wrong with me? Because I would pull over and go, excuse me, what are you doing?
Would you do that?
Well,
really?
Because, yeah, now we don't know why they're doing it. Are they just, wearing black?
No, but that's their goal, is to get people a little worried.
Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be it, right?
Yeah, it's the only thing I can think of.
Well, thanks,
careful,
Eddie.
Eddie.
Be careful, please.
All right. We'll keep an eye out.
All right. Please do.
And interview him like I would do. What are you doing, kind
what
sir?
What exactly, creepy man, are you up to?
Are you trying to scare people, or do you just like wearing black? Because it's very slimming.
It is very slimming.
Hi, Bob.
Hey. How's it going?
Pretty good.
I think you guys have been listening to my, or thinking about my childhood, because when we were younger, we were a bunch of derelicts, but my brother and I had this great idea of scaring neighbors or whoever was driving down our street. We took a dummy. We made a dummy. Took my mom's styrofoam head for a wig. put her wig out there. And then we put it in front of the parked car in front of the house, poured beet juice all over the place. And we just decided to wait and see who would stop. And well, our neighbor stopped by. She got out of the car. She was terrified. She thought it was one of us because we came from a big family. And she heard us laughing. She yelled at us. She called our parents, and we caught hell. It wasn't good.
But didn't you feel bad when you saw her, Bob, getting so upset? At that point, I mean, it sounds like a good idea on paper and when you put the fake wig head. But didn't you feel bad for a minute?
Well, yes and no, but once she called my dad, we knew we felt even worse because he was kind of strict and that didn't really fly real well. So.
Did you get the belt?
No, we did have the belt, but we didn't get the belt for that. But
did you get the wig head?
No, we actually had to go over there and apologize and say we'd never do that. But the only other thing, when we were kids, we would get two or three guys at night on each side of the street and fake like you're picking up a rope, all of it in unison, and everyone yelled pull at the same time, and everyone, the cars would always stop.
I gotta admit, I think our neighborhood did something like that too, but we were just practicing to be good mimes.
Right, exactly.
Paid off.
Love the show, guys.
Thank you,
Bob.
Why is that a thing in every neighborhood? That happened when I was a kid. I'd see kids doing that. Once or twice a year it happens in my neighborhood. Why is that still a thing? Why has that been going
it's
on for this
It's still happening?
Years? People still do that. The pretending, as a car's coming by, pretending you have a rope as the car passes.
I was going to say we did it when we were growing up because there really weren't video games then.
Right. But now...
I don't understand it
kids
now.
Pretending he's Marcel Marceau. I just want to drive past. I don't want to... I don't need a show, a mime show.
I just stand in the middle of the street and pretend I'm in a box.
Right. I'm walking against the wind. Great, because I'm trying to drive down your street.
You know what I saw just last week? I was going home, and I did a double take. It wasn't on the expressway. It was just in a local area. Yeah. I can't remember where I was going, but it looked like there was a foot hanging out of the back of a minivan. And so I'm like, oh, my God, I got to tell them. And it was just flopping, so it looked like somebody's leg was broken. And then it took me about 20 seconds to realize it was just a fake foot.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that they had hanging out of their car just to do exactly what it was.
Yeah, but it wasn't funny.
They can't all be funny. They're,
I called
you know.
The police and gave their license plate number. I didn't, but I should have. It could have caused an accident.
It almost did.
I was speeding to catch up with the car to go, excuse me, but you have somebody's leg sticking out of the back of your car.
I know. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news. Later on, by the way, remember how at the beginning of the show we were talking about how much we miss Andrew Shaw?
Yes.
Judge Surratt will join us to talk about why exactly we had to part ways with Andrew Shaw and what this means in terms of other free agents. Are we going to lose more players on the Blackhawks? Are we going to get more guys? What's going to happen? What's the shakedown from losing him and Teuvo Teravainen and Brian Bickell?
Yeah.
What next? We'll find that out later on. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
If I can't help falling in love with you, like a river flows, surely
I love this song.
It is a pretty song, isn't it?
I know you weren't the biggest Elvis fan in the world.
I'm really not. I appreciated what he accomplished, but
I didn't like his movies, but I liked his singing.
Well, all of his movies were the same movie. They changed the title, but it was always the exact same movie.
Just him dancing with hot girls.
Yep. That should have been the title. Elvis Dancing with Hot Girls.
Part one.
Part one, part two, part three.
All right, there was this study that the New York Times published fairly recently. It was in their Modern Love column, and it was called To Fall in Love with Anyone, Do This.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in it, the writer Mandy Len Catron details how she used research on love to make herself fall in love, and it worked.
Oh.
There's a
I'm
formula.
I'm anxious to hear how you do this.
About two decades ago, social psychologist Arthur Aaron came up with 36 questions so deep that he believed they would lead people to fall in love.
Oh.
So here's the basic rules and regulation of the study. A heterosexual man and woman enter the lab through separate doors. They sit face to face and answer a series of increasingly personal questions. Then they stare silently into each other's eyes for 4 minutes. And the most tantalizing detail of the study she did, 6 months later, two participants were married. They invited the entire lab to the ceremony.
Is it 4 minutes after each question or 4 minutes after all the questions have been asked?
After the questions.
After all the questions
mm-hmm.
together.
For 4 minutes.
And then you just stare at the other person.
And evidently you fall in love. It's something you need to work for. She goes on to explain that love is a choice, not so much something that happens to us like we're all led to believe.
Oh.
Although you beg to differ. You knew when you saw Terry.
The second I saw her, I knew. Isn't that crazy?
No, but it just sounded so cute. And it worked because you have a milestone anniversary coming up.
Thursday will be the 25th anniversary of us being married. We were together for 31 years, but married for 25 of them. As of Thursday.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. You're a very lucky lady.
I was just going to say.
Very fortunate.
You're a very lucky man.
I am. Boy, am I.
All right. Well, now it makes some sense because, you know, when you meet someone, you don't know each other. So you have to answer these really deep questions. Can I go over some of them? We're not
going
to do
absolutely.
All 36. But if
I'm afraid Kevin's going to look into my eyes, though, at the end and fall in love with me.
We should do that
Kevin,
experiment.
Kevin, shield your eyes. Damn your eyes, Kevin.
Too late,
I mean
Bill.
That.
Too late.
Hey, if somebody's single out there and you're not on your dating apps, then go to aplus.com. Look for this New York Times piece called To Fall in Love with Anyone, Do This by writer Mandy Len Catron. Catron.
Right.
All right. Here are some of the questions. And again, this does open up a really good line of communication when you don't know someone. Like, here's question one. Given the choice of anyone in the world, whom would you want as a dinner guest?
That's a great question.
It tells a little about yourself
the
way you answer.
That's a very good question. And it's living or dead, or does that not even matter?
It doesn't even matter. I would say
anyone in the world.
Only answer the questions you're asked. Don't make new ones.
Right. That's true. Because there's 20 something questions. Why would I ask
36.
More? 36.
I'm not going to go through all of them. But these do
what
have.
What would your answer be?
Good God, I don't know. Lucille Ball.
That'd be interesting. She is dead, you know.
Well, you just said living or dead.
All right.
It doesn't specify. Given the choice of anyone in the world, whom would you want as a dinner guest?
I would go with Paul McCartney.
Really?
Yep.
He's a vegetarian.
Yeah, that's true, too.
All right, not Paul McCartney. Your menu.
Who eats a lot of food that's bad for them? Willy Wonka. I would go with Willy Wonka.
Somehow, I don't think you're kidding.
That would be fun. Does it say fictional or real?
No, it just is.
Just says anyone
first
in the world.
That comes to your mind, and then you'd explain why. And Lucille Ball, I just think she's one of the funniest women ever. I would bring up that Jenny McCarthy said she's the new Lucille Ball.
Oh,
how do you feel about that?
That's an icebreaker.
And I just think we'd have a lot of laughs together.
Yeah. All right. That's good.
All right. You're going to have to answer some of these.
All right.
Would you like to be famous? And if so, in what way? That's question two.
Yes, for living forever. They'd go, Bill Left, that's the guy who's been alive forever and will never die. That guy's famous.
No, because then he'll be compared to Mickey Rooney.
That's true, too. No, but he died. He's gone.
Yeah, but it took him long enough.
Right.
His family didn't think that way. Here's question three. Before making a phone call, do you ever rehearse what you're going to say and why? I do if it's something important,
mm-hmm.
because I have a tendency of speaking before I think,
mm-hmm.
which is really great for radio.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something really important, if someone has passed away and I want to make sure to say the right thing, or if I'm calling about something in particular, I have been known to rehearse it a little bit.
The only time I ever did it was in seventh grade.
Who'd
there
was you break
a girl,
up with?
No, there was no, there was no breakup. There was a girl that I met somewhere that I really liked, and she gave me her phone number, and then I wrote out on a piece of paper like all the things I would say and then what I could potentially say, like based, it was like a tree. If she says this, I'll say this, and then if she answers this way,
like a
I'll flow say
chart?
This. Yeah. And it ended up being like a poster board.
I think I'm falling in love with you.
Oh no, I told you don't look in my eyes. Don't
no,
do
you
it.
Told Kevin not
Kevin,
to look in
Kevin, don't
your
look
eyes.
In my eyes.
What would constitute a perfect day for you?
Well, that's a great question.
See what I mean, though? These are really awesome questions where you are going to connect,
right?
Or find out if you don't connect. You know what I mean? These are great questions to find out the character of someone, what their likes are.
Yeah.
I know you'd like a long walk on the beach.
That would be certainly part of it. Yeah, that would be up there. But, all right, so... Is this saying, like, let's say the two people are fairly incompatible, but just the mere act of answering these questions together and then looking into each other's eyes, will that draw them into each other? I mean, you could decide by the third or fourth question, wow, this is not the person for me.
Well, you can. I can't do that.
You couldn't?
That.
No?
No, you just kind of want to hear them out because, you know... You don't know this person. They may say something stupid, which I've been known to do if I'm not comfortable in the situation.
Right.
So I think you'd have to, you know, hear me out for all 36
right.
questions.
Like if, all right, I'm trying to think of a good example. If you asked that, if that question was asked, what is your perfect day? And then the girl goes, oh, cattle rustling. Then I'd go, oh, that's not the girl for me. She just wants to go cattle rustling. And I'm not into cattle rustling at all. So at some point, somebody would say something that would say to the other person, that's not my person.
Can I guarantee no one has ever answered
well,
cattle
not,
rustling?
Not here, but in other parts of the country, I bet that's the number one answer.
How about this one? Because I want to know the answer. I want to know this answer, and I won't look at you because I'll
right.
fall in love, Bill.
Yep.
When did you last sing to yourself or to someone else?
This morning in the car on the way here to myself.
What'd you sing? Come on, I gotta know.
I don't know the name of the song.
Oh,
I'm trying to
God.
Think of
Kevin, aren't you dying
it's
to know
it's a song
what
called
sang?
High All the Time by Tove Lo. I was singing that in the car on the way here. It's very catchy.
I've never heard that song.
It's a beautiful song. It's a beautiful song. She does it a lot better than I do.
You really, honest to God, we're singing along.
Yeah, I was, yeah.
Like I don't midway see through, you as someone like...
I don't always, but when the mood hits me, and I couldn't find that song on, I have it on my iTunes, and I have that in my car, but I was driving, I couldn't get to it, and I needed to hear it, so I had to fill in for her. I sang it on the way here.
Wow. Can you let us know how it goes?
No.
Kevin will find it.
I know our FCC license is renewed every year at about this time, and I don't want to put that in jeopardy.
Who's it by? Tone Loke?
Tove Lo. Tone Loke? No, Tove Lo. Or I've heard her name is actually, because she's Swedish, it's pronounced Tove Lo, but I say Tove Lo.
Did you say that to yourself, too, in the car?
Good song, Tove.
Well, you guys are being hurtful.
A little.
All right,
I was singing in... No.
You really today?
Yeah.
I don't...
On my way to work.
As a solo car singer. I sing to everything.
Do you rock back and forth?
A song that lent itself to rocking my head back and forth.
I got to hear it. All right, let's take a break.
You're going to fall in love with the song.
And tooth.
Don't you freaking look at me.
All right. We'll take a quick break and then more fun. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. This is the song I sang today.
Were you all breathy like this?
I wasn't as breathy as this, but I was... Yeah, I was pretty breathy. Isn't that a beautiful tune?
Oh, and I can see it fits your voice characteristics, too.
Yeah, it's not in my range.
Probably in natural.
It's really not in my range at all.
I want to hide in your trunk and just listen to what you do.
You don't want that. You do not want that.
Get out of my trunk.
All right. We are talking about an article that the New York Times published, How to Fall in Love. To fall in love with anyone, do this. And in it, writer Mandy Len Catron details how she used research on love to make herself fall in love, and it worked. So she did this with someone and hooked up with someone.
And she had never met this guy before. Does it say if they had any history together prior to this test?
Whether or not the experiment itself led to the author and her partner falling in love or just led her in the right direction, her outlook on connecting to another person is something we can take away no matter how we fall in love. She said it was almost like hypnosis.
Wow.
Someone said this was done on the Big Bang Theory, along with being these questions, along with being locked in a room and solving some puzzle while a zombie tied to a chain is trying to get you.
Hmm. I've never heard of that either. You would fall in love from that?
Well, yeah, because you think you're not going to make it out.
Maybe. That's possible, I guess.
So you got one last time to make whoopee?
Well, this is essentially, this is like what they do on any dating site, like any computer dating site, where they ask you key questions to try to see if you're compatible with the other person. I mean, this is like a more involved version of this.
These are weird, though. These get weirder.
The first few you asked were pretty good questions, I thought.
They were good. Here's number six. If you're able to live to the age of 90 and retain either the mind or body of a 30-year-old for the last 60 years of your life, which would you choose? I'd go mind right away.
Yeah, I think I would, too, but that's tempting.
What if you don't have your mind?
Yeah, but if you have the body of a 30-year-old and you don't have the mind, you might still think you're smart.
Right, that's
right?
True.
And if you have the mind of a 90-year-old, you know you're dumpy looking.
That's true. Right.
Yeah, I guess I don't know.
It's better to look good than feel good.
It's all about balance.
Do you hear this one is directed right towards you, Bill Leff.
What is it?
Do you have a secret hunch about how you will die?
Yes.
See?
I do not. I do know what mine is, because I definitely do. I think it will be animal-related.
You're just saying that to be funny.
No, I'm serious. The closest I've ever come to death ever was because of a dog. I was driving to Danville when I was doing stand-up, and I was on this rural road. And I've always thought this, that somehow, because I don't like pets, that somehow that'll be my last...
It would be ironic.
I know. And I'm driving, and there's nothing anywhere on the road. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this dog just jumps up out of the ditch and just stands in the middle of the road. And I swerved around it, and my car spun around twice, and I went into the ditch and everything like that.
Oh, my God.
And then the dog just was looking at me like, well, that's what you get for not liking dogs.
And you're blaming the dog and not the fact that you were doing stand-up in Danville?
Wow.
It was at a very nice theater.
Was it?
Yeah.
It's a gig.
Yeah. But... I've always had a feeling, like this weird premonition that
I
whatever
think Steve Bertrand is going to kill you.
I think that's
going to be your hunch.
That's possible. But I've always had a like this weird suspicion that it's somehow pet related, my death.
But do you see how these questions prompt a conversation? Because then right now, as I'm falling in love with you, I go,
yeah.
Oh my God, he was a stand-up comedian. He is pretty funny.
Yeah. You got
kinda
to work
cute.
In Danville.
Well, I wouldn't slam you like Bertrand did.
It was just a question.
Right. I get it.
It's funny you said the closest you ever came to death. The closest I ever came to death was whitewater rafting. And I don't like to do crazy experimental things. I had never done it before. And we went with a bunch of friends in the Peshtigo River in Wisconsin. And it was fun until you're going down these rapids, and we got stuck like kind of under a small waterfall. But the waterfall was filling the raft up.
Oh, no.
So I'm like, okay. I'm really good in emergency situations, too. I'm like, will someone help us, please? But, like, no one's really around because they weren't stuck
right.
on the rocks under the waterfall.
Yeah.
So I don't even remember how we got out of this situation, but I thought, this is it. I guess I have a terrible fear of drowning, so that's, I guess, my premonition.
Oh, yeah. But you see that the purpose of these questions is actually very smart because it gets people, like, depending on how much knowledge you already had of that person that you're supposed to fall in love with, all of a sudden these prompt you to be honest and tell stories, and they're good questions.
Absolutely, because it invokes a conversation.
Right, right.
If you could change any, I think you and I will answer this question the same.
Mm-hmm.
If you could change anything about the way you were raised, what would it be? We would have famous parents. We both have wished that.
Oh, not famous parents. Would you say you'd want
yeah,
famous
said
parents?
Yeah, you too. Yeah. I thought
no,
we
I
wanted
never said
to,
famous.
What did you want? Just rich parents?
No. I mean, that would be fine. But no, changing my parents wouldn't be.
I was kidding, but you've said it in the past that you always wished you had. I thought
no,
you said that.
No, never famous. I wouldn't want famous parents.
What would you
That's
want?
Not me. I would have loved the swimming pool.
That's what you would have changed about the way you were raised?
Yeah. I enjoy a swimming pool. I don't know.
A tennis court?
Oh, that would be all right, too. Boy, I would have to. That one might take some thought.
All right,
but it wouldn't be. I know it wouldn't be famous parents.
I always thought that my parents were famous, and I just.
Really?
They weren't really my parents, oh. Yes. Oh. I thought you and I had discussed that, evidently
I
not.
Thought I was adopted for a long time because I don't look at all like my parents. So I was, and my brother looks a lot like both of them. So I thought, and I think I told you this, there was a book when I was a kid, my dad had these books called Whatever Became Of, and they were stars from like the 1940s and stuff. So then it's before the internet where you could just look it up. Now it would take you 30 seconds. So what they would do is they would show you somebody's picture who was famous in 1941. And then you'd turn the page and they'd go, that guy died. And then the next one, they'd show you somebody famous from 1946. Then you turn the page, that guy died too.
No bio or anything?
Sometimes, if they were still alive.
Oh,
but
geez.
Normally the guys had died.
See, and that's why I like pictures. I want to see pictures of people right before they die.
So you can compare.
Well, because then you realize that, you know, you think of these people as being everlasting and superstars. They're like, we all are
right,
going
right.
to shrivel up.
Right.
Boy, but, I am not falling in love with you, Bertrand.
But in one of these books...
How about if I still have my 30-year-old body?
All right, maybe. Hubba hubba.
There was this kid...
Not so much.
There's this kid in one of these books, and his name was Billy Severn. And I saw this kid's picture, and he looked a lot like me. And I was convinced that that was me, that I was adopted, and that that was really me, Billy Severn. And then my parents explained to me that that kid was a kid in 1943... And if I was still alive, I mean, I'd be way, way older
yeah.
than I was.
I'm glad they explained it to you that way.
That was just a few weeks ago they explained it to me because I was sure it was me.
All right. I have to ask you one more because I want to hear. You're the one that I want to answer all of these.
Oh,
because it's
all
just
right.
they're just you have just great answers.
Oh, thanks.
If you could wake up tomorrow having gained one quality or ability, what would it be? And don't say X-ray vision.
Although, be honest, invisibility wouldn't be the coolest thing
what
in the
else
world.
Is there?
X-ray vision and invisibility.
Invisibility is way cooler.
Would you take invisibility over X-ray vision?
I don't want X-ray vision.
How about the ability to fly?
Damn.
That's tough, right? Flying would be fun.
I think I'd rather have invisibility.
How come? Why?
I don't like heights. I really don't. It would freak me out. I wouldn't be able to use my ability well.
Oh, so the flying would be, right.
But to be invisible, oh my God, you could eavesdrop right? on everyone.
I know.
I'd like to cure disease, but you guys go ahead.
Steve, that's not as cool as being invisible. That's nowhere near as cool.
Remember soap, bird
yeah,
on soap?
Robert
I'm
Mulligan?
Invisible, yes.
Yep. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Steve will give you the news, and then there's more show coming. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Well, we have lost another Blackhawk favorite. Andrew Shaw will be playing for the Montreal Canadiens next season. This is after we have lost Teuvo Teravainen and also
Brian Bickle.
And Pitt Martin is no longer a Blackhawk. And Judd Surratt is here to explain why this could happen. Hello, Judd.
I won't delve into Pitt, but all right. The other stuff is all salary cap related. Hey, Bill and Wendy, how are you? You know, unfortunately, I think the Blackhawks tried to move heaven and earth and tried all sorts of different scenarios that they could keep a guy like Andrew Shaw, and that means being very flexible, at least on Andrew's part, as far as term, as far as a contract value, unable to do it because down the road, what you also have to think about is you have to sign Artemi Panarin after next season. You have to be able to find the money to do that. And even by clearing some of the money that they have here up into the draft, they only have $6 million free under the cap. They still have to sign a few guys to fill out their roster.
All right, but he wanted $4.5 million, and what did they come in at that they were able to give him, or was that not disclosed?
As far as the Blackhawks or the Montreal Canadiens?
The Blackhawks.
I have not heard an official figure from the Montreal Canadiens, but Wendy, you have to also understand that's not just a one-year deal. What are you going to pay him next year? And then next year, let's say he's on the books for $4.5 million. What are you going to do with Artemi Panarin?
What other hard choices
do you have to make?
I'm saying, don't
get Judd mad, Wendy.
I'm not trying to. Judd, what I'm saying is I think
Wendy.
All I know is what I read on Twitter and everywhere else on various publications.
Well,
that,
we don't know if that's accurate, though, Wendy. That's the only thing. Now, I have not heard an exact figure coming from the Blackhawks, but leading up to the draft and before they had an official salary cap number, and again, the salary cap is only going up by, I think, $1.6 million, so it's essentially flat. And I think going forward, unless something dramatic happens in the world economy or certainly with the Canadian economy, I think you could probably see that that's going to be flat. But how are you going to be able to fit all of these guys in? What other hard choice would you have to make, not just this year, but next year or the year after?
I am siding with the Blackhawks on this. I am saying Schauzer wanted $4.5 million as reported. And
yeah, we don't know that, but okay.
Okay. But I'm just saying, you know, it breaks my heart for him to leave, but it's like he's still making decent money, and couldn't he decide to stay for less than that?
Well, that's certainly in his camp. You know, now you've got the other side of it. How long is the National Hockey League career? How often are you getting an opportunity to sign a long-term deal? What sort of insurance do I have?
That's true.
Especially with the style that I play, that I could get a serious injury. I mean, all of a sudden, if he gets a concussion next year, what are you doing for the next 3 years? If I sign a one-year deal, I could be in a serious predicament. So you don't get that many opportunities to sign these deals. He has to do what's best for Andrew Shaw. The Blackhawks have to do what's best for the organization.
Judd, is this true or not true? I've heard this from a couple sources, but you tell me if this is real or not. People have said that because Artemi Panarin had such an amazing season, the way his contract was structured was he got bonuses if he scored X amount of goals. He got a bonus for being the rookie of the year, and that money ate into the salary cap money for the Hawks. Is that true?
Oh, that's definitely true. That's definitely true. And you have to also go back. The Blackhawks had to shed Rob Scuderi's contract off of their roster. They were still retaining a little over $1 million from that contract. So Panarin having the huge season that he had and getting rid of Scuderi, those numbers added up for the Blackhawks. But I think if you're on the Blackhawks, listen, you put those out as incentives. You were hoping that he could hit those numbers. Listen, he had a monster season.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the way that the playoffs were structured in the Western Conference, and specifically the Central Division, you could not have had a tougher draw in the first round probably than the St. Louis Blues. You got it. You took him to 7 games. If you don't hit 2 posts from Brent Seabrook in Game 7, maybe we're not talking about this. So I think he achieved the goals that they were hoping, and they had a monster season as a result.
What other sports have these salary caps? Is it with all sports?
No, baseball does not have a salary cap. The NFL has a hard cap. It's structured a little bit differently than the Blackhawks because they don't have guaranteed contracts. The NBA has something called a soft cap, so you can exceed the cap if you want to retain some of your own players. You know, and I think that's the most difficult thing is the system, the way it is now, Wendy and Bill, is the commissioner and the league, they want you to draft and develop your own talent, but the way they've set it up, there's no mechanism to reward you for doing that. See a guy like Brandon Saad, see a guy like Andrew Shaw, and that's sort of a flaw in the system. And if you ask people, well, would Gary Bettman be willing to change that? And they say, oh, no, no, no. He really likes this turnover. He likes the fact that it creates this level of parity, but it creates terror and torment for all sorts of teams. Remember, if you look at the LA Kings, there aren't that many teams that are in the Blackhawks boat that have won this many cups, that have high, top-notch talent, big-name free agents. But if you look at the LA Kings, they're in the same spot here. They're losing a guy in Milan Lucic, who's in his prime, who's a terrific power forward, a terror to deal with on the ice, a great character player. They're going to lose him. In fact, they lost him. He'll go on the market.
It just doesn't seem right. It really doesn't. You know,
it's like you're punished for being good.
I totally agree. You know, and the last time I had the commissioner on was in the Stanley Cup Finals in 2015, and I asked him, would you run it up the flagpole to be able to change the system that you can reward these teams for drafting and developing? Oh, no, 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 I like it. I like the system the way it is. And unfortunately, you're going to have to go through this. So, you know, Mike Babcock used to say, listen, you get good, you win championships, you get paid, and then you get paid, and then you start losing players. That's what happens.
Wasn't there a good goalie on somebody's team who was taken off a team? I can't remember who it was. I can't for the life of me remember.
This last season?
Just these trades going on right now. Elliot.
Brian Elliott?
Yes.
Well, St. Louis had to certainly make a choice, and they're in a little bit of a different situation because they're not necessarily a cap team, but they are a budget team, and their captain, David Backes, is up for contract. What are you going to sign him to? How much are you going to sign him for? You also have to take into account his age, and he's a little bit older than a guy like Andrew Shaw. He's in his early to mid-30s. What do you do there? They had to get rid of one goalie to create some space, but they still have to sign Backes.
I'd like to slap Backes.
Oh, come on.
In the Backes.
Come on.
I really would. He bugs me.
You've got some other choices. There's a kid named Kevin Shattenkirk on the back end.
I don't like him either.
Well, what are they going to do with him? I don't think they can afford him, and a lot of people feel like he's going to be traded before the season starts this upcoming year because they can't necessarily afford him. I don't think he wants to be there. They're another team that has to make some of these hard decisions. But you constantly have to find young, young talent that you can develop. If you look at the Blackhawks, part of the reason that they gave up Teuvo Teravainen, and they didn't want to do that, is that they have some kids coming through their system. Nick Schmaltz was the guy I talked to with Rowan Anna the last time I was on. He's the next guy that projects as an impact player in the Blackhawks system, and a guy who in many ways has Teuvo Teravainen-like skills.
All right, stick around. More with Judd Sirott as we go over what the Blackhawks season will look like next year and beyond. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Judd Sirott is here. He's our friend. Judge Sirott is our friend, Wendy.
Although he's getting a little Hochberg on us.
Well, it's
Hochberg on you?
It's very emotional.
Yeah, it is emotional.
It is.
And again, I'd like to pitch the Blackhawks store. We just bought a Shaw jersey for my son Dylan. I think for $50, they should swap out the name and number for you.
That seems doable. It's not a lot to ask.
I'll see what they say when I go ask them to do it.
Yeah, see what they say. Hey, Judd, what about this? What about Andrew Ladd? Now that they've freed up some money with Andrew Shaw, is that a good harbinger of what's to come for Andrew Ladd or not?
Good question. Again, with a guy like Andrew Ladd, I don't know how many more contracts he's going to sign. So if he's going to come here, and in talking to Andrew in the past, he's at a point where he can sort of pick and choose where he wants to go. If he's willing to take something that is short on term and light on dollars that's team-friendly for the Blackhawks, maybe there's a chance to pull something off. I know Brian Campbell's name has been circulated quite a bit, and there's certainly a chance that could happen. For Brian, he's just coming off that monster deal that the Blackhawks originally signed him to as a free agent, just finished up with Florida, had a terrific season there. He has his roots here in Chicago now, not only having played for the team, but married a girl who was from here, and he makes his offseason home here. Certainly there's a chance that he could take a short-term deal, light on the dollars, a lot like Brad Richards did back in 2015, and that would be enormous to bring that guy, a puck mover like that, back on the blue line. He doesn't have to carry the mail. He can come in and be the number four defenseman on the team, a guy who understands the system and understands what it's like to win championships. It would be terrific if Stan Bowman and the organization were able to pull that off.
All right, with the with our loss of Andrew Shaw, who are the youngins that are joining the team? What do we know about them?
I think you've got a few. I think one of the guys that immediately will get a lot of attention because he plays a similar style to Shaw is a guy like Ryan Hartman. Now, Ryan has to do a couple of things in order to be more successful at the NHL level. He has to commit himself during the offseason to be in much better condition. He has to be disciplined on the ice because even if it's Andrew Shaw or anybody else on the team, if you're taking a lot of dumb penalties and Ryan Hartman's a guy who can rack them up, he is so difficult to play against. I've talked with opponents about this, guys in the minors about this. If he can play smart, control his discipline, get a little bit faster on the ice as well, he can do a lot of those same things. He is good with the puck, and he is smart. Then some other guys, we're going to see what they're like when they come to camp. We'll see. I don't expect Nick Schmaltz to start at the NHL level, but if he does well at the American Hockey League level, or if he's a surprise out of camp, it would not be beyond the realm of imagination that the Blackhawks start him with the team on October 12th for opening night. Tyler Motte is another guy that got a taste of the American Hockey League out of the University of Michigan last year, that did very well there. He could come up and make an impression. Tanner Carroll. So there are a lot of youngsters. There's a lot of opportunities for guys, maybe more so than ever, on those bottom two lines to make an impact and carve out a niche for yourself.
What's the number one thing, Judd, that the Blackhawks have to improve on from last year?
Ooh, that is a good question. Not an easy question. I think that there needs, you know, there are a couple of things, but I think that you need more coherent depth up front. I think a lot of the time last year, Bill and Wendy, if you look at what they did for the bulk of the season, they were a one-line team. It was Kane, Anisimov, and Panarin.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Toews was never really able to settle in with Marian Hossa, and you can name the winger. It was the guy who was supposedly in the lottery spot for Joel Quenneville. And then those bottom two lines, because there was so much chaos maybe on the top line, they couldn't seem to find that fit. So if they're able to find some coherent depth on those first four lines, I think that'll be good for the team. I think that'll be the best for the team. If you look at the team that won the Stanley Cup this year, Bill and Wendy, that blue line does not blow your doors off. In fact, if you put those guys head-to-head with the Blackhawks, you would say to yourselves, oh, the Blackhawks are much better.
Yeah.
But what you saw from the Pittsburgh Penguins was a terrific four-line rotation. And how often do we hear Joel Quenneville spout about that? That's what the team needs more of, and they need a lot of those young guys or lesser established players to be able to come up and play meaningful roles. But that said, the core players also have to be more consistent.
We're going to miss Andrew Shaw, but who knows what the new recruits might bring, because remember, Teuvo Teravainen was the talk of the town, and then all of a sudden we got Artemi Panarin and Artem Anisimov, and then Teuvo was like, Teuvo who? You know what I mean?
Exactly. You know, and let's see if Nick Schmaltz is able to make the impact that I think the brass is hoping. He's a guy that I think he could fall in love with. He's a high-skilled, high-risk player at this point. I'm sure he'll do a lot of learning under Joel Quenneville. And if Ryan Hartman can be the guy that the organization hopes, he was a low first-round pick for the Blackhawks a few seasons ago, a local product who hails from Bartlett. He plays the style very similar to Andrew Shaw, but he's got to make a better commitment, and he has to be more disciplined on the ice. But I think he's a guy that you guys will fall in love with, all of the fans will, if he's up to stay here consistently. If you remember when he debuted, he played his first game, his first shift right in, he skated in, and popped the helmet literally off of a guy named Dinas Zubrus, who he was given up a few inches and about 20 pounds to. He drilled him against the New Jersey Devils. And everybody remembers that impression. He just has to harness that ability on a night-in, night-out, shift-in, shift-out base.
Well, he better, because he's on the Blackhawks now.
And we like to win. We kind of like to win. Do you think Tommy Hawk will be with the team next year, or are they going to trade him?
You know what? I don't know. You know, he's been talking about term and money at this point, and the mascot salary cap has not moved as much.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of free agent probabilities for him. You know, I also understand he had some bonus money that went into a new fan van for Tommy Hawk. You may have to be able to account for that.
Judd, thank you. We miss you. It's good to talk to you.
Great talking to you guys. Anytime.
October 12th. Can't wait.
See ya.
Thanks, Judd. It's Judd Surratt. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Ro and Anna have. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.